May I call the meeting to order? I guess not.
And it was well told.
Good morning. The State Board of Education will come back to order. Ms. Cordial, are you ready to call the roll, please?
Cole Quinn.
Okay. Board Member Durham.
Here.
Board Member Flores.
Here.
Board Member Goff.
Here.
Board Member Masnick.
Here.
Board Member McClellan.
Here.
Board Member Rinkin.
Here.
And Board Member Schroeder.
Here.
Board Member McClellan, would you be willing to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Board Member Flores, would you be kind enough to... Oh, wait, first we need to have a motion for the regular agenda. Do you have a motion, please?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Have a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor? Anyone object? I'm having a little trouble waking up since I had a month off, so be patient, please. Board Member Flores, would you be kind enough to read a painfully long consent agenda?
Yes. I move to approve the agenda as published.
These are the consent items.
This is the consent agenda. Motion. I move to place the following matters on the consent agenda. 12.3, to approve the notice of rulemaking for the administration of the School Health Professional Grant Program. 1 CCR 301-97. 12.05, to approve Denver Public Schools' request for waivers on behalf of the Colorado High School Charter as set forth in the published agenda. 12.6, to approve Poudre School District's request for waivers on behalf of Mountain Sage Community School as set forth in the published agenda. 15.02, to certify payments to school districts for the Public School Finance Act of 1974 as amended, state share total program in the monthly amount of $362,757,330 for July 2017 through November 2017. 16.02, to approve the list of alternative education campuses for the 2017-18 school year as set forth in the published agenda. 19.30, to appoint Lynette Steinhoff to fill the Southeast Region vacancy on the Special Education Fiscal Advisory Committee. 19.04, to approve the distribution of payments to administrative units for gifted education under the Exceptional Children's Educational Act as set forth in the published agenda. 19.05, to approve the 2017-18 school year allocation and distribution of English Language Proficiency Act funds to school districts as set forth in the published agenda. 20.01, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning an authorization charge number 2014EC679, direct department staff and State Attorney General's Office to prepare the documents necessary to request a formal hearing for the revocation of credential holders' substitute authorization pursuant to 24-4104CRS. 20.02, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning an application, charge number 2014EC976, direct department staff to issue a notice of denial and appeal rights to the applicant. 20.03, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a license charge number 2015EC675 signify its acceptance and approval of the stipulation for the revocation of the credential holder's license and adopt the order by directing the chair of the state board to sign the final agency order. 20.04, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning authorization charge number 2016EC226, direct department staff and the state attorney general's office to prepare the documents necessary to request a formal hearing for the revocation of the credential holder's substitute authorization pursuant to 24-4104CRS. 20.05, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a license charge number 2016EC571, direct department staff and state attorney general's office to prepare the documents necessary to request a formal hearing for the revocation of the credential holder's Colorado professional administrator's license pursuant to 24-4-104CR. 20.06, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a license and authorization charge number 2016EC1569, direct department staff and the state attorney general's office to prepare the documents necessary to request a formal hearing for the revocation of the credential holder's Colorado teacher's license and Colorado substitute authorization pursuant to 24-4104CRS. 20.07, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a license charge number 2016EC1661, signify its acceptance and approval of the stipulation for the suspension of the credential holder's license and adopt the order by directing the chair of the State Board of Education to sign the final agency order. It continues. Mm-hmm. 20.8, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a license charge number 2017EC124, signify its acceptance and approval of the stipulation for the revocation of the credential holder's license and adopt the order by directing the chair of the state board to sign the final agency order. 20.09, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a license charge number 2017EC230, signify its acceptance and approval of the stipulation for the revocation of the credential holder's license and adopt the order by directing the chair of the state board to sign the final agency order. 20.10, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a license and authorization, case number 2017EC757, signify its acceptance and approval of the stipulation for the revocation of the credential holder's license and substitute authorization and adopt the order by directing the chair of the state board to sign the final agency order. 20.11, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a license, charge number 2017EC777, issue an order of summary suspension of the credential holder's Colorado professional teacher's license by directing the chair of the state board to sign the order and instruct department staff and the state attorney general's office to prepare the documents necessary to request a formal hearing for the revocation of the credential holder's license pursuant to 24-4104CRS. 20.12, to approve the 14 initial emergency authorization requests as set forth in the published agenda. Okay, I guess that's it. And 20.13, to approve the final renewal emergency authorization requests as set forth in the published agenda. This is the end of the consent agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a proper motion. Do I have a second, please? Thank you. Does anyone want to pull anything? Board Member Durham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to request the removal of the following items. 12.04.
Do we have 12.04?
12.04 is not.
12.04
is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, it shows consent on. But am I using the
You're
old?
Using, yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, good. It's good. I'm clairvoyant too. 12.05. As well. 12.03, 12.05, 12.02, 16.02, and 20.13. And I think most of those, Madam Chair, I just have questions. If we take them in the ordinary course of business, it shouldn't take long. There may be one of those that would be an exception to that.
Board Member Masnick?
You've forgotten my name.
It's been a long time.
I've forgotten my name. I'm working.
Did you pull 15.02?
Yes.
Yes.
You did.
I would like to pull 20.06. And kind of like Board Member Durham, I just have some questions that may be resolved either.
We need to be careful on that one.
We'll just need to address it in executive session.
Yes. I just want to make sure it's not right now on the consent agenda.
Okay. That's fine. Anyone else? So the motion, with the exception of those identified items.
What about?
Do you have one, Ms. Morris?
What about the one for? That was pulled already. That okay. Denver Public Schools.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that one was pulled.
That's both.
Yeah.
Are you ready to vote? Do I have unanimous support for the consent agenda as amended?
Yes.
Okay, good. Now, Mr. Durham, do you want to right now ask some questions?
No, I think we just take them in an ordinary course of business would be probably easier.
Yes. Okay.
They'll come up pretty quick, most of them.
They will? Okay.
Yeah. After the budget item.
After the budget item, okay. So, folks, help remind me when they come up, please. The next item on the agenda is a report from Director of State Board Relations.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board, and Commissioner Anthes. I hope everyone had a nice summer and enjoyed their time off enjoyed their month off in July or lack thereof.
Thank you.
As always, I just ask that you please speak clearly into your microphones, and if you've turned them off, to please remember to turn them back on when speaking. For those of you needing to connect to CDE's guest wireless, please locate the CDE hotspot, and the password is still silver, capital S. In your board packets, you have the events calendar, and a few reminders I'd like to bring to light is the September 13th and 14th board meeting will be held in Burlington at the Burlington Community and Education Center, and then the board retreat has been set for September 20th. Also, in your board packets and or available on board docs are the following materials. For today, Wednesday, August 16th, item 9.01, you have materials related to Pueblo District 70's request for a motion to dismiss of the Charter School Appeal case number 17-CS-04, Swallows Charter Academy versus Pueblo District 70. For item 11.01, you have two memos regarding the 2017-18 CDE budget requests, and then as well as an update. They're accompanying PowerPoints and supporting IMS budget request document. For item 12.01, you have a memo regarding Denver Public Schools innovation application requests on behalf of Inspire Elementary and Maury Middle School, along with their supporting materials. For item 12.02, you have a memo regarding the emergency rules for the administration of the School Health Professional Grant Program, 1 CCR 301-97, as well as a red line and a clean copy of those rules. For item 12.03, pretty similar to 12.02, a memo regarding the notice of rulemaking for the School Health Professional Grant Program Rules, 1 CCR 301-97, and then those same red and clean copy of the rules. For item 12.01, you have a memo regarding the 17-18 school health professional grant recipients and the accompanying recommendations list. For item 12.05, you have a memo and supporting materials pertaining to Denver Public Schools charter waiver request on behalf of Colorado High School Charter. For item 12.06, you have a memo and supporting materials pertaining to Poudre School District's charter school waiver request on behalf of Mountain Sage Community School. For item 15.01, you have a memo regarding the declaration of positions and supporting in those supporting exhibits. For item 15.02, you have a memo regarding the Public School Finance Act of 94 as amended, state share payments in the accompanying list. For item 16.01, you have a memo regarding the reconsideration of accreditation ratings for districts. For item 16.02, you have a memo regarding the applications for the 2017-18 school year alternative education campuses in the accompanying list. For item 17.01, you have a memo regarding the rulemaking hearing for the rules for the operation, maintenance, and inspection of school transportation vehicles, 1 CCR 301-26, a red line and clean copy of those rules, the rules to statute crosswalk, and an updated, which is on your dais, an updated response to comments document. For item 18.01, you have a memo regarding the post-secondary workforce readiness update and the accompanying PowerPoint and maps. For item 19.01, you have a memo regarding the notice of rulemaking for the rules for the administration of the Protection of Persons from Restraint Act, 1 CCR 301-45, a red line and clean copy of the rules and rules to statute crosswalk. For item 19.02, you have a memo regarding the notice of rulemaking for the Colorado Reading to Ensure Academic Development READ Act, 1 CCR 301-29, the accompanying PowerPoint, House Bill 17-1160, a redline copy of the rules, and rules to statute crosswalk. For item 19.03, you have a memo regarding the appointment of Lynette Steinhoff to the Special Education Fiscal Advisory Committee, her resume and letter of recommendation. For item 19.04, you have a memo regarding the gifted education distributions and accompanying distributions list. For item 19.05, you have the memo regarding the school year 17-18 English language proficiency district allocations and the accompanying allocations list. For item 20.12, you have a memo regarding the 14 initial emergency authorization requests. For item 20.13, you have a memo regarding the 5 renewal emergency authorization requests. And for item 21.01, you have the 2018 proposed regular state board meeting dates. I'm almost done. For Thursday, August 17th, item 3.01, you have materials pertaining to the charter school appeal, case number 17-CS04. For item 4.01, you have a memo regarding the 2017 CMAS and PSAT-SAT state-level results, and we are hoping to get the embargoed PowerPoint to you later today. For item 6.01, you have a memo regarding the accountability clock debrief and the accompanying PowerPoint. For item 7.01, on your board bench before you, you have the USDOE's official feedback letter on Colorado's ESSA state plan. And lastly, for item 8.01, you have a memo regarding the 3 research requests we've received, the accompanying PowerPoint, some background information on the Safe Community, Safe Schools Project, and an article on the high school dropout crisis addressed by Colorado Youth for Change. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. Any questions? Ms. Cordial? Thank you. The next item on the agenda is an update from Commissioner Anthes. Commissioner, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. Good to see you all. We've missed each other, I know, having July off. And while we had the board meeting off, you can be rest assured we didn't take any time off here because nope. I have a lengthy commissioner update for you today, so I'll try to go through them quickly. But. So the first thing in July is we always have the CASE conference, the Colorado Association for School Executives Conference, which is a great place to connect with all of our constituents in terms of all of our superintendents and principals and other educators. And so many of the staff spent a couple days up there or the week up there giving presentations, connecting, networking, and getting feedback from our superintendents and principals. We did have the annual commissioner lunch up there, and I believe board member Schroeder, Rankin, and Goff, attended those and attended that. And so I gave a little presentation about sort of what looking ahead and some ideas for goals for the CDE Department Performance Plan. And then took some feedback from superintendents throughout the rest of the time, and we'll be able to talk about that more when we talk about our performance plan with you all here soon. But it was good to get some initial feedback and input from them. The other thing is we had our first meeting of my teacher cabinet. So if you remember, I launched a teacher cabinet. We had 175 applicants for that from around the state. Originally, I was going to select 15, but I decided to up it to 20 because there were so many great applicants, and I wanted to be sure that we got representation from all around the state, from charters and online schools and all of that. So we have 20 amazing teachers that are on my teacher cabinet. We had our first meeting. And, you know, the purpose that I had for this was really to make sure that I'm grounded and the department is grounded in how policies actually affect the classroom and how those are playing out, so that we can understand that and we sort of have a go-to group that we can connect with when we have questions around how does this really play out in real life. And so we talked a lot about that, and I will say it was a great meeting, amazing teachers, but they did express quite a few challenges that they're dealing with. And some of these are echoed in the same things we're hearing in the teacher town hall meetings around the teacher shortage issue. But you know, the one that stood out to me that I'll just highlight to you is that universally these teachers, and I have teachers from lower performing schools, from higher performing schools, from lower socioeconomic status places, from higher socioeconomic status places, they universally said that the students coming to them are coming with more challenges. And so they're spending more time on management and organization and meeting the basic needs of students than they ever have before. And some of those teachers have been in the profession for 30 years. I also had a span of experience from a 30-year teacher to a 7-year teacher. But they universally said that that was quite a difference than maybe 7 to 10 years ago. So that's something that I want to dig into a little bit more in the future. Moving on to the teacher town halls, we've been in partnership with the Colorado Department of Higher Education to host town hall meetings around getting more information from communities around the teacher shortage. And this was prompted by a bill that was passed in the legislature last year saying that the Department of Higher Education with CDE needs to produce a strategic plan to present to the legislature. And so we've been doing the town halls in order to get the themes and get the strategies and potential solutions to the teacher shortage from all around the state. So those town halls have been, you know, we've been hearing the same themes in those town halls, and they fall within a couple categories. One, just the stress that's on teachers, and that connects to what I said before around students coming with more needs and needing to meet their basic needs before even getting to the learning. Support, so feeling supported in those early years, having you know, mentors and folks that they can go to help them launch, you know, this very critical and complex profession. Compensation is definitely one that we've heard, and you know, that's been loud and clear that many teachers are starting teacher salary in Colorado, if you do the math, can be under minimum wage in some cases. And so how do they have a living wage? Then preparation, making sure they feel prepared for this complexity that they're entering into. And also housing. So housing plays out a little bit differently in different places. In Denver, there is housing, but it's too expensive. In the rural communities, there is no housing in some places. And then in the resort rural communities, so like Telluride or Vail or something like that, there could be housing, but again, astronomically expensive for the salaries they're on.
Excuse me, what did you say right before housing? What was the theme right before housing?
Preparation. Preparation. Okay. Making sure they feel prepared. Some we're hearing they feel kind of thrown into the profession without all of the tools necessary. So that's sort of what we're hearing from the teacher town halls, and we are writing all that up. We also have a survey where we have over, I think it's over 5,000 responses right now. So it's definitely generating a lot of interest in the state around the teacher shortage issue. I also held a rural council meeting, and this in statute, the commissioner has a rural council. And I, you know, as I sort of got my feet under me in this new position, I did a little refreshing on the rural council, refreshing our purpose, our goals, how we would work together. And so we spent our first rural council working on the teacher shortage, because obviously that's a big issue. And so we did a lot of problem solving and solution oriented things in that first council. And I think I've heard from some of you that you may want to have a little report at some point from our rural council just to hear some of the issues they're struggling with. And so we can certainly work to put that together. Some of you have asked for an update moving on to the turnaround clock. So we made it through all of those hearings, and you issued decision orders for us to implement with the districts. And so just want to give you a high-level update on that. In general, everything is moving forward. We've worked with Adams 14 over the summer to develop their progress monitoring plan per your request. The district turned their final plan in on Tuesday, and we're in the process of reviewing and giving feedback. Pueblo, Huerfano, and Aguilar all submitted their signed contracts with their respective management partners. And they're just establishing that work to move forward. Pueblo will bring their remaining innovation plans to the board in the coming months, so we're working in partnership with them to make sure that those are rigorous and supported. HOPE's management partners have submitted their first quarterly report to CDE, and we're working on reviewing that. Prairie Heights and Franklin Middle Schools in Greeley are underway implementing their innovation plans, and this included holding a summer training for school staff on one with one of their sort of management partners that's helping them on their new personalized learning platform and focus on leadership development. Julesburg has formally closed grades 6 through 8 and transitioned all students into other schools for the 2017-18 school year. And Westminster Public Schools, along with most of the other schools and districts listed, have applied for a Pathways Implementation Grant with us to continue supporting their work moving forward. So that's sort of a high level of where they're at. We're continuing to follow up with all of those schools and districts on a regular basis just to make sure they have the support they need to move those plans that you directed forward. Two more things quickly. You know, July was busy. The Education Leadership Council met for the first time yesterday or 2 days ago, I'm not sure. And that's the ELC, and that I talked to you guys a little bit about that. That is a executive order from the governor and the lieutenant governor's office to sort of resurrect this leadership council that that was in place several years ago and sort of went dormant. And this plan to resurrect this council was a lot in relation to Representative Rankin and Hamner's vision bill that didn't quite make it through the legislature, but they wanted to have a vehicle to continue that work. And so we met for the first time. The overarching purpose of that, though it's still being refined in terms of the level at which it will land, is to develop a vision and strategic plan to drive improvements to Colorado's education system from early childhood to the workforce. So it has a wide range of folks on that council, and I think more so than the previous leadership council. It has more folks from workforce, economic development, business. It's much broader than just the education community. So we kind of met and got our feet together, our feet under us for the first meeting. I will say that there's been a little adjustment to that, and that is the Lieutenant Governor was going to be chairing that, but as we know, the Lieutenant Governor is now running in a political race, and so she didn't want that sort of political side to shadow the work of the council, so she actually asked me to chair the council along with Representative Rankin. So at this point, Representative Rankin and I are the co-chairs for this council. So I'm excited about that work. I think that it's always helpful to have that external group that can give recommendations and can think about the future, in relation to our workforce and business needs moving forward. And so, by me being on there and representing you all, which is a bipartisan board and a state agency that is not political, I think that's a good thing. Board Member Schroeder also sits on that council as well, so she was there as well. Lastly, I just want to highlight that we're going to be talking in the future here. We've been developing our performance plan, so I've mentioned this one other time, but it was time to sort of refresh our performance plan. We hadn't done much refreshing of it for about 5 years, and this is a performance plan we have to submit to the legislature each year in November, and we have to present to the House and Senate Ed Committees. Around this, and so I'm going to be sharing some of those with you. Some of those ideas I shared at the superintendent's meeting just to get their feedback, but the staff have been working to put something onto paper for you all to react to, and we're using your board priorities as guideposts, as well as the legislative priorities that we're required to implement, as well as some of our own ideas around what are some key leverage points that CDE has that maybe we could move the needle on some of our achievement for students. So that's coming, and it'll probably be coming to you in September. So that was a big board report. With that, Madam Chair, I'm done for today.
Thank you. Questions, please, of Ms. Anthus.
For today.
You wish. Just getting started. So if I may, I'm going to ask Ms. Cordial to share with board members an article that came out, I believe, yesterday on NPR about some of the work that's being done in Southwest Colorado where there's a teacher shortage. And they're finding some unique ways to help train to bring in teachers. It's not the PEBC Betcher per se program. It's a different program to help these brand new teachers where they're really not feeling ready to teach. I thought it was a very interesting one, and I'll ask her to share that with you. It's not very long at all. It probably addresses some of the things that are being discussed in your programs. Our next item is, Ms. Cordial, if you'd be kind enough to announce an exec session.
Madam Chair, before we go there, could I just have a moment of personal privilege for two things?
Certainly.
One is I apologize for my phone going off. I'm still learning the difference between on and off, and I think I got it there now. And secondly, I want to thank Dr. Anthus and her staff and the other members of the board for the kind thoughts during my recent recovery. I very much appreciate it. So thank you.
You're welcome. We're very happy you're here. Ms. Cordial, and folks, board members, if you need to run out, make it really fast because I'm not counting, but we're behind.
An executive session has been noticed for today's state board meeting in conformance with 24-6-402-3A-CRS to receive legal advice on specific legal questions pursuant to 24-6-402-3A Roman numeral 2 CRS and matters required to be kept confidential by federal law or rules or state statute pursuant to 24-6-402-3A Roman numeral 3 CRS.
Do I have a motion to convene an exec session?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Anyone opposed? Have someone make a motion, please, regarding...
I make a motion to dismiss charter school appeal, case number 17, CS-04, Swallows Charter Academy versus Pueblo District 70.
Second. We're busy.
Oh.
Denise, can
busy,
you call
the
roll?
Busy, do we need to start over? We started without you.
Yeah.
Do you want me to start again?
Well, let her turn it on and stuff. You better wait for
it. Well, I think it's on. Mikey's here.
Okay.
Mikey's here. It's on.
Could I be a part of that?
Record.
What?
What was the motion?
Oh. It was motion number one.
Okay. And who made that motion?
Joyce.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I seconded.
Oh, wait. Motion number one or two?
No. 901.
To dismiss,
yeah.
That's what I said.
Would you be good enough to call the roll, please?
Well, are we in discussion?
Sure.
Thank
Go
you.
Go for it.
Oh, good.
Sorry, I didn't ask.
I'm going to support the motion because I believe Swallows missed a step in their contract, which has a dispute resolution mechanism. But I would say I think the district could have done a better job in enumerating the reasons and stating that up front would have been helpful. And perhaps avoided the cost of this dispute. And finally, I think it's worth noting that they may not in the future, when they enter the dispute resolution, they may not unreasonably withhold approval of a higher cap. They will certainly have to have justification, even under the terms of their contract. In fact, I think their contract would require them to have reasonable grounds not to allow an increase in enrollment, and they may very well have that. And finally, I would just say that there appears to be a significant waiting list for this charter school. I would hope that the district would take a hard look at that because they are denying parents the opportunity to choose what they believe is the best education for their children.
Thank you.
I would also like to say that had not Swallows Elementary School not maybe thought a little bit harder and not placed their motion before the board in 3 days, that might have set off the district saying, well, you know, they'll get their idea or why we're dismissing it when we're before the board if that happens. So I think it kind of goes both ways in that respect.
Any other input? Okay. Now, please call. Thank you.
Board Member Durham.
Yes.
Board Member Flores.
Yes.
Board Member Goff.
Yes.
Board Member Masnack.
Yes.
Board Member McClellan.
Yes.
Board Member Rankin.
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder.
Yes.
Since the board has granted the district's motion to dismiss the charter school appeal hearing scheduled for tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., it has been vacated. In lieu of that, the state board will commence tomorrow morning at 10 instead of 9 a.m. and will start in the morning with the ESSA plan feedback. Staff will amend the agenda and send out a revised notice to reflect this change. One more hour of sleep.
One more hour of sleep. Thank you.
Do we have to start at 10 instead of 9?
Yes.
Yeah, we start at 10.
At 10.
Yeah.
Okay. We're taking care of somebody who's recovering.
I'd rather get out of here.
I know.
I think we're right.
But it does help us.
That was contemplated. Also, Ms. Madnick, we have some hearings that have to be at a certain time. So we were kind of stuck with the rest of the day for our schedule. At this time, we'd like to entertain public comment. Each individual is allowed 3 minutes, and Ms. Cordial has a new mechanism by which to let you know when your time is up.
Is it a buzzer or what? Is it
a buzzer? There will be a ding at the end of 3 minutes, but yeah, now people can see how much time they have for public comment or appeals or anything like that. Very snazzy.
So I would like to remind our public that board members do not engage in public comment during your time. Also, board members cannot accept public comment on quasi-judicial matters such as charter school appeals, disciplinary matters, accounting clock hearings, and written final determinations, etc. We have two folks who have signed up, Anna Karina Patkova.
Hello, board members. I'm an 11th grader and former student of the STEM school and academy, and as of March, my mother and I have been trying to obtain GPA approval for me because the school breached its contract with the district and did not implement any actions for me when my GPA fell below 2.0. My mother and I have tried to talk to the school and Douglas County Board, and no one is taking any action. This school is a very loose and disorganized school that does not have good support program for students and does not act upon its contract to provide the support it should. When I was at the school, no one ever tried to discuss with me if I was doing poorly in a class. Yet for 4 years, I managed to make it work and received good grades. Everyone told me that the classes I normally took and did well in should have been the ones to drop when what affected me were my electives. This poor advisory led me to become very stressed to the point I could not concentrate because I was not sleeping. In turn, I received a 1.5 GPA due to the falling behind on the piling up coursework. The proper protocol for such a situation is to get a student's teachers as well as members of the administration to meet up with students to see what plan can be made to allow them to do well. No one met or talked with me until the last 10 days of the semester. These problems root from teachers, students, and administration not having proper communication going on between them. And these students end up slipping because these oversights leave them to fend for themselves. My mother has sent countless emails on the matter to all of the board members here, so this is going to be short. Later, my mother and I wanted to fix this, and when we found out about GPA recovery, we emailed the executive. The executive of the school said in a June board meeting that she didn't receive this email when we sent it in March. This then made us realize how poor the communication the school had, and had my mother then moved me to Lakewood High School as of this summer. After we did not get approval, we decided to contact the district board. We were told they could do nothing, and it was the school's job. After looking over several laws in the school's contract, there were several ways that the board could have gotten involved if a breach of contract occurred at the school, which it did, but no one did anything. There were no questions made by the district board towards the school as per how such a situation could be handled, and no one did anything further than say it cannot be done. I am 16, and at this point, I should be looking forward towards succeeding in my new school year, and because of this fact, I have moved the schools, which is really stressful already. Yet even if I do well in these next 2 years, my transcript will not reflect that it was not my entire fault, and because of this. A questioning of my consistency will be brought up, and it will affect my future education. And as far as the school is concerned, there are several other students that will be affected and already have. Other parents have complained about the school not providing students with the proper attention to 401s or IEP and the proper ways to follow through with their procedures. Through this inaction, the school has reflected it only cares about its standing and not all students attend. I come here because this is the highest power in Colorado education that I can meet with. If the CDE has the power, then it to a certain extent still manages the district board. This district board has not been very forthcoming with protocol and does not seem to acknowledge. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Walker.
Spent a lot of time yesterday afternoon with some Maryland elementary students in community gardens, and the rain came up faster than you know, and all of a sudden you can't quite get it back to the school in time, so I got a little congested. Anyhow, this summer, spent a fair amount of time with students of all races and ethnicities in that preschool, first grade, second grade, and I'm even more concern about standardized test validity. I just simply didn't see this business of slow learning and Latino and black students being behind. They're just as intelligent, dedicated to learning, wanting to learn as other students, in my opinion. And there's nothing wrong, excuse me, there's nothing wrong with teachers using more of their judgment if they're properly educated and trained and make some ideas, opinions about these students before they start giving these standardized tests, which have provided means of employment for many professors in our schools of education for years. However, I remember from, I think it was Dr. Nackerstein's book, Histories on Education, our colleges and universities were told very clearly early in our history, you're to provide engineers, doctors, lawyers, nurses, teachers. And now all of a sudden we're having town hall meetings all over the state. Otherwise spoke to the one in Denver at United Way. And we have a crisis in teaching. And I hear it's nationwide, statewide. And I've been making calls to schools of education out of the state, starting in Emporia State Teachers Colleges, where about half a dozen my aunties, great aunties, and my grandmother intended Emporia at about 1910, first generation out of slavery. They understood the importance of teachers then, and they understood the importance of state funding more than we seem to now. So now we're having hearings, and we're going to have vote on some things during election year, and I hate to sound cynical, but tax increases, salary increases, which, according to the reports I'm hearing, we're going to have to strongly consider and hopefully pass during election year. These town halls should have been held before the election. They should have been held before this last legislative session. Now, it's easy, I guess, it's not really easy to assign blame. But I'm not one bit pleased with what I'm hearing from our schools of education. They should have done more, a lot more, when it comes to planning, and they should have done a lot more to make sure that this state didn't have the teachers' crisis it's having. Some of them are making six figures, a lot of terminal degrees, and they can't plan and predict better than they have. They're sure good about pushing the standardized testing to try to make students of color look, in my opinion, inferior. And I have no desire to race bait at this time with what's going on with our president in this country. That's not my desire. But at the same time, we have to state the facts they are. And from what I'm hearing, teachers don't feel they're getting the respect, education, they're not getting paid. And that seems to be a fact. We have to have teachers. You can reach adulthood and never see a lawyer, but you can't reach an adulthood without teachers.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
Is there anyone else here who wanted to make public comment? All right, now we can have a break, a real break. A real break.
Why?
Why? Yep. No?
No, we don't have a timed item.
We don't have a timed item?
Okay.
I didn't take a
Take five.
Yeah, let's take five, please.
I'm always for a break.
Item on our agenda is the continuation of the budget discussion. Commissioner?
Yes, thank you. I'm going to, we've brought this to you a couple times before, and this is giving you more specifics, and this is an action item today. So I'm going to turn it over to Jeff Blanford, our Chief Financial Officer, Marsha Bohannon, our Chief Information Officer, and Alyssa Pearson, our Associate Commissioner for Accountability and Support.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning. It is a continuation, and we actually have a two-part presentation today. The first is an action item. Ms. Bohannon and I will be presenting two decision items, which we're asking the board to take a vote on as to whether they should be included in our 2018-19 budget submission, which is due to the General Assembly on November 1st. And then the second part, Ms. Pearson We'll be walking you through some updates on the resource needs for school and district supports. So
can you use your mic a little bit?
Sure. Is that better? That might be a little too good. Okay. So to start with, this is a table I think most of you have seen before. This is all of the requests that we plan or hope to include in our budget submission this year. The first two items are required, the department is required by statute to submit. Total program generally deals with adjustments to the formula for each year. Student count is the biggest one, and it's one I understand. So that's an example of what that item makes adjustments to or requests. And then the categorical programs, we have eight categorical programs at the department, and those have an annual CPI increase that we submit a decision item to apportion or allocate that that increase across the eight categorical programs we have here at the department. The last two are the ones Marcia and I will be talking about, and those are made at the department's request or discretion. The first is meeting transcription for about $145,000, and information management services, which we discussed a bit in June, for about $2.3 million. And Marcia and I were talking the other day. She had mentioned she had some questions about where that funding will come from if it is awarded, and that is state general funds. So those will be additional dollars coming to the department. It would not reduce or affect other appropriations or program lines that exist already at the department, just to clarify. So the first item is transcription services for meetings posted online, and this is specifically state board meetings. The Office of Civil Rights under the department, U.S. Department of Education, did a review of CDE's website, I believe it was last summer, 2016, and found that accessibility would be improved if we transcribed you all's meetings to provide access to deaf, hard of hearing individuals and things like that. It's also, as we've done our research in terms of this item, the cost for transcribing audio seems to be similar to video. So I know you all are discussing whether you want to move to video for your meetings, and that shouldn't really impact this item at all, although the way it's phased, we would have an opportunity to make adjustments if it was. So just so you know. The nice thing about this item is it can be broken down into components of cost and minutes. We love that in budget. We had about a year of meetings that we used to estimate. So we do need a larger population when we issue the RFP, but we have a pretty good idea that the total is going to be about $145,000, and that's two pieces. One will be a one-time cost to transcribe meetings going back to fiscal year 2013-14, and then an ongoing cost to transcribe meetings as we move forward, as well as any special requests for meetings that may be available on audio prior to 13-14. That's as far back as we're planning on going now, but we would allow for any special request to address someone calling and asking for something from 2007 or something like that. Those assumptions are based on we took a year of meetings and spoke with vendors who estimate about $5 per minute is what it'll cost. And based on that year of meetings we're looking at, we think that the 6 years will be about 29,000 minutes, which is how we get to the $145,000. We'll have to do an RFP for this. It's big enough that it'll require a request for proposal. And those final costs will depend on the total time for the meetings rather than the 12 months that we're basing our assumptions on currently.
Any questions?
Kind of. Board Member Goff? So if somewhere down the line a request is made for a certain date to be transcribed, so
this is, I'm sorry.
No. Yeah,
I'm sorry for my whatever inarticulation. So the cost would be, there would be a cost for that,
yes,
regardless of who makes the request.
Yes. That is our assumption currently. The vendors we've spoken to have indicated it's about $5 per recorded minute, and if someone were to call and want the 2 days from, say, September of 2007, we would have to incur the cost to transcribe that as well.
What if it's internally? A request is made internally.
Since we don't have that capability internally, we would also have to, if we made right. that choice, it would cost us the same. Yes.
Okay.
Board Member Flores?
I'll start to see.
Yes. I was just wondering, why would the Office of Civil Rights be interested in reading transcripts? What is this required of all other states?
Actually, Busy did some research, and other states already make this available. They already transcribe or close caption their meetings, depending on whether they're audio or video. And I'm not sure the Office of Civil Rights was so much concerned about it. They were wanting to make it more accessible to the public at large, specifically individuals who might be deaf or hard of hearing. It's more about the Americans with Disabilities Act and that requirement than their interest, I think.
May I just make another? I also think that, you know, when we're about accountability, these meetings, I think, are very important to the public. And yet, I know I've said this before, but there's, you know, the goings-on of board meetings. I've been told they've been, I really didn't make this up, a secret society. And the board considered a secret society, and that's not good. I mean, we should be, let the sun shine in, and we should be more open
Absolutely.
About it. And I think that we have some issues here that if the public were able to hear about it, might be more apt to maybe provide more monies. We know we've had school districts come before us who have gone bankrupt, and I think if the public knew more about this, they'd be more concerned that, you know, we're nickel and diming education here in our state. And so this may be a positive thing.
Board Member Rankin.
Mr. Blanford, when we talk about $5 a minute, is that a person that is transcribing?
I don't know that for sure, but that would be my assumption.
That would be mine too. And I know the way technology is going, and in the interest of transparency, I don't know why we haven't priced out the video and the closed caption. And there is software that's available. It's not perfect, but mm-hmm. by the time we get this passed, it will be, I'm sure.
Oh, it's much better. It's much better than it
and
used to
I
be.
And I believe that would be in our best interest monetarily to do something like that, if it's just a matter of software that we can add to some of our computers. I definitely would like to see the bottom line of that. And it could go back and possibly transcribe at any time, and we wouldn't have to worry about a third party with people doing this at $5 a minute. A lot of times I don't know what we say is worth $5 for some of the minutes.
I'm curious, on what basis have we made the decision to have X number of years on our website? In other words, how do we get there?
So it's based on what's currently on our website. All audio.
No, who decided what is currently on our website?
It was a kind of a collaborative effort. When this first came out, to avoid trying to transcribe all audio recordings that we had on our website, which we had from when we first started this in September 2009 or around there up to present, we had initially decided, well, let's take down, I spoke with Dana and the communications office, and we took down anything prior to, I think we had 2016 and 17. And then after we took those down, we realized we got a lot of requests for audio recordings, just for people to, you know, do some research on what the board has done in the past or just any questions they have. And so 2014 is kind of where that last year, where that kind of, where that ended. And so we decided to have 2014 to present on board docs because, or I'm sorry, on our website, just because it took away some staff time to go back, make a link live, have it live for a little bit until the person was done listening to the audio recording, and then take it back off the website again. So it was kind of our compromise of popularity of the audio recordings.
Mm-hmm.
Board Member Goff, go ahead.
Thank you. I still want to clarify, are there archives of prior live recordings prior to what's on the website or what that time frame? Good, because I just think that's there are some historical, instrumentally vital to policy making that's gone on in Colorado that predates 2014.
Absolutely. And we're required by statute to maintain that indefinitely. So it's just we don't have it published on our website, but we do have it housed here.
Permanently indefinitely, I guess. There would be sort of an earliest date when that whole technology was invented. I'm thinking, if we go back to 1951, which is the beginning of the state board.
That might take a little time.
Sorry.
Board Member Durham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we don't turn these over to the state archives?
We do as well. We provide them with a copy, but...
Is there any reason to maintain them twice? I mean, once they're over the archives,
I think
there's a procedure, and it would seem to me that it may not cost a lot, but duplicating is unnecessary, and I think we ought to have a point at which they're essentially turned over to the archives. Mm-hmm. May save some money. It's get them out of our hands and put people who are responsible for preserving that make sure they actually have them and they have the responsibility.
Board Member Masnick.
So, writing on what Director Rankin said, so this RFP or this amount that you think the $5 a minute stands for is for a human transcription. Have we even looked into what do they call it, voice recognition software or whatever that transcribes from?
And it's very good, Matt.
So have we looked into that?
If I can, I'm going to ask Dana Smith, our Chief Communication Officer, to come up because she's been playing point on this for us.
Hi. Yes, that's a very good question on the technology. It's evolving all the time and getting better all the time. It's not quite ready yet, as you might know from some of your phone and some other services that you use. Sometimes some pretty crazy things come out of it. So it's not quite ready yet for an official document of this type, but someday it probably will be. We don't know when exactly that will be, though.
Well, I was wondering if it would it... I guess the concern, my first thought is, would we be smart to use that kind of software to begin with and use a human at $5 a minute for filling in whatever gaps? But I guess you have to figure out where the gaps are.
Mm-hmm. A human would still have to read everything and look at and double check, so... It's about the same as a human transcribing it, as a human checking everything and also listening at the same time.
Board Member Rankin?
What software have you looked at for a closed caption?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but I can get that to you and let you know what.
But you do know the price
we've looked at.
You know the price of that.
We did look at some of the pricing, but again, the decision point came down to, was it good enough? And none of the technologies were good enough, as good as a human.
What does good enough mean? I mean, I know there are some glitches in it, mm-hmm. but I think some of it, I don't know of any that can't be figured out, mm-hmm. and that someone could read and know what they were talking about. And I'm curious as to the exact software you've looked at, because I have seen some that's very good,
mm-hmm.
and I would like to have that and have the price with it too.
Okay.
I'd like to see the comparable
okay.
between that and a human person. And if we say one way is and it's human, I don't know when we would get to the point where we would transition it. And I think there's a lot of costs there, so I'd like you to look into it.
Happy to follow up with you on that.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments?
Are we talking about the information management services
yeah. Yeah.
part?
I was just going to let Jeff continue.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And how serendipitous, I'm about to turn it over to Marcia. So you want this? We're on to information management systems.
Thank you, Jeff. Good morning, everybody. I've already talked to most of you about this, so I'm going to try to go through this relatively fast so I don't bore you. But I want you to ask any questions you've got, and feel free to jump in if there's something that is not clear. Before I start, I want to kind of provide a little bit of an analogy. This first slide talks about the different kinds of services that we provide in the information management services division. It mentions maintenance and developing new systems and then kind of a hybrid. Think of the maintenance part of this as, you know, if you're having a house built, there you start with a foundation. I mean, you actually start with digging a hole, but that's not a good picture in your mind. So you start with a foundation, then you do the framing, you do that kind of thing. That is the sort of thing that when I'm talking about system maintenance, you have to build those structures that underlie all the other technology that we have in play here. So things like, you know, you've got your foundation, you've got electrical, you've got plumbing, you've got all the stuff behind the walls and the things that you don't actually see visibly. That all has to work for you to live in the house. So we do that kind of stuff. We do the foundation, we help build the walls. You don't, you know, necessarily know what we're doing or see it visibly. You know, you don't actually say, I'm going to meet you at the house with the crack in the foundation and knobbing tube electrical. You say, I'm going to meet you at the red house with white shutter, something like that. So there's the piece that you see and you feel that's more visible, and that's what the other folks at CDE lead those efforts, the educational programs. We support all of that so that that works. So when I talk about maintenance and that kind of thing, it's not something that people necessarily can relate to immediately, but I just kind of want to put that in your head as we go through this. So we do provide the maintenance of the systems that we have in place, and we do provide some new system. Very little of that is what we do. We don't build new systems unless we get some influx of money, either through a legislative fiscal note or a decision item, something like that. But we do enhance systems and try to make them as work as effectively as possible, especially to help the districts out. And so we do kind of a combination. We are funded primarily for maintenance. Like I mentioned, there's not very much of that money at the top that we can use for adding new systems or building. So that's why we have to request specific money either through a bill or through a decision item request like this. So it's broken into three areas. It's the maintenance of the infrastructure, data reporting and analysis, and again, that's kind of the outward, the more visible aspects. That's what we provide as deliverables. So we help the CDE business units to produce the reports that go out, the performance frameworks that you're going to look at tomorrow. We're responsible for working with Alyssa's team and Joyce's team to get those out. So we're in the background, but we're kind of in everything. And then data privacy and information security support. You've seen and heard me enough talk about that. So you in fact, that's what you usually hear me talk about. So I probably don't have to explain what that is. But the sort of the bottom line here is, from a maintenance point of view and keeping our systems going, right now we are able to do that. We can keep things going, sort of status quo. But as we move forward in time, we're not going to be able to, because we don't have the funds to do it. Very much like the back to the house analogy, contractors and all the people that you would hire to fix things that go wrong in your house, you've got to, if you have an electrical problem, you have to hire an electrician. So you don't necessarily, well, you might do it yourself, but I wouldn't. And I don't think anybody would want me to. But you go to the people who are experts at that particular service, and you hire them, and they have a responsibility to stay up on the technology and to understand, you know, what is new, what have they learned, what can they do that makes your house better. So our vendors are the same way. They have a responsibility to understand where risks might be in their software. They understand the ins and outs of it. So if we have a problem with an underlying system, we call the vendors, and for that we pay a price. We pay every year, and it goes up every year about 5%. So it's, again, it's sort of like that analogy. We're paying for the experts to help us, because we can't have that expertise in every, you know, we've got, I think, a list of 34 vendors that we pay maintenance to. So there's a lot of different systems that we and vendors that we work with. So that's really where, you know, from a maintenance point of view, and this is the stuff that's really hidden that you don't see, but I just wanted to kind of put that into context for you. So the services that we provide, I've talked a little bit about that, but we do have a lot of customers. We're not just those people that come and fix your computer when it breaks. I know a lot of people think about, you know, when you're working on your computer in your office, if you can't get it to work, you call the help desk. So that is a part of our operation, but it's just one part of it. We do provide a lot of other services as well. I mentioned the reports, so we have quite a few customers on for those. We've got the 250 whatever LEAs, all the districts and LEAs and BOCES, et cetera. BOCES and AUs. We also help to provide the reports that go to the public, so that they go to whoever out there needs it, whether it's parents or advocacy groups. I never say that right. But people that do research on education issues and challenges, so that policy can be improved. And then we also do the privacy and security programs. And if we don't do these things, all these things are required by law. So if our systems fail or start to diminish in their effectiveness, then we do become non-compliant with various laws and statutes. So it depends on what it is, which statutes. But these three categories that I've broken this into are three very important areas that we provide support for the rest of CDE on. And this is just a quick kind of visual, trying to help explain all the different steps that go through the data life cycle. Because essentially what we do is we collect the data from districts, we process it, store it, clean it, do all that magical stuff, and then we provide the information back in a format where people can actually read it and make use of it. And we're working on doing that better. But there's a lot of reports that go out. I mean, sometimes it's just a spreadsheet with raw data. Sometimes it's more of an interactive report. Sometimes it's the performance frameworks. So there are a lot of different uses for it. So now this sort of busy picture is meant to give you an idea of how the budget is distributed, just at a very high level. The big yellow, it's kind of yellow and gold, part of this is what I call the lights on work, which is really all the things listed in there are things that just help to keep systems running, status quo the way they are today. Doesn't add new functionality, it doesn't improve any of our applications, but it does keep the computers running, it keeps the collection system going, it keeps reports going. It basically just keeps it static. The second, the blue part of this is the privacy and information security piece of this. This is also, it's become a lights on thing too. I mean, we have to have it. We need to make sure that our data is secure and we can take care of the student data and the educator data that we handle, and we do handle a lot of data. So that's the second part of the request. And then the little green part at the top is what we have left. And that's where we do that's the money that we can use for improving our reporting, for improving any applications for the districts, making it more user-friendly. It's pretty much anything left over. That means if we have to hire a new person for a particular skill set and that salary range has gone up, that money comes out of there. It's very slim. This is just to kind of give you kind of a proportional feel for where we are. And I would add that part of the challenge we've had in the last few years is with the new privacy requirements, we have to do a lot more work to suppress the data so that we're not revealing the identity of any of the students or educators. And that's taken a lot more time and a lot more work and a lot more skills. So we have to kind of evolve along with the industry and along with the needs, and that's an area where we've had to put a lot more time and effort into with no increase in budget. And I got some questions from some folks when I was talking through with you in our individual meetings about the discretionary funds and what that term really means. And I know it kind of sounds like it's the money we do whatever we want with. It's basically that little piece that's left. And as our vendor bills increase over time, that's all we've got to draw from. So actually I have that kind of a chart coming up. Let's look at that one. As the vendor costs go up, which is the orange line, is it orange? Yeah. We have to pull that money from somewhere. So, and our discretionary fund, which is the blue line, it's going the wrong way. It's going down because we're pulling money from our static amount of discretionary funds. So I just wanted to sort of explain that discretionary may not be the right term. That's just what we tend to call it. But it's the money that we've got left to apply to any additional needs we have. So whether it's vendor increases or increased skill levels that we need for the different kinds of reports, just increase in volume of reporting that we have to do, or making data pipeline, which is our collection system, a little bit easier for the districts. All of that comes out of that same pot. So if you'll see in this chart, those lines are coming together, and within a year we're going to be pretty much out of our discretionary funding. So that's not where we want to be. This one, I step back a little bit. This one is just another way to view how much of that discretionary area we've got left. And as you'll notice, it's a little bit of the cream at the top. So we're trying to get, what we need to do is get some kind of regular influx of funds to cover the increase in the cost that just happened. It just happens. The industry, that's the way the industry works, and it's not uncommon at all. But we're just budgeted in such a way that we don't get any increases regularly. So.
Excuse me.
Sure.
Yeah. Board Member Flores, yes.
Is that something that could go in the budget that we could ask when
yes.
the budget is done?
Yeah, and that's actually what we're hoping to do here is go forward and request that money. And that's we'll get to the numbers here in a minute, but that's exactly what we would like to do, and so we wanted your approval to do that. So the next one is it's sort of a worst case scenario, but I just want to give you kind of some ideas of options. So if we don't get additional funding, things will stop working. I can't tell you exactly when or, you know, what will go first. Because what happens when you don't pay your maintenance and your support fees to vendors is you don't get, it's like when you log into your computer at home or you're working with your phone, you'll get a little message periodically that says there's an upgrade available. Click here to download that into your phone. And if you don't do that, then they get really nasty with you and basically make you do it. But if you don't do that, you're opening up vulnerabilities in the system, so your security can be compromised. Sometimes it's new functionality, but usually it's not very much new functionality because you have to pay for that. But it's very important to keep things up to date, and that's what we pay for when we work with our vendors and the price goes up. So that's why it's very hard. What would happen if we stopped paying those bills? Eventually we'd get to a point where we would call and they, you know, since we haven't paid, they would not be there to help us fix the system. So we'd be on our own, and we would definitely open up the systems to risk, especially with security risks and, affecting the data that we take care of and just the viability of the system itself. So some of the options, you know, if it gets to that point, we can stop our data collection system. Of course, we don't have the data that we need to report on that way. So it does give us back money, but we still have legal requirements to collect the data and then report that information back out. The second one is stopping the central management of data. And what I'm referring to there is leave it up to the CDE units to do their own collection and reporting, which would save IMS a ton of money and most likely cost all of CDE a whole lot more, because then they would have to be Katie looks scared. So, yeah, it's not a great option, but it's, you know, I mean, some of the units already do some of their own collection and some of their own reporting. Generally, over time, over the last 30 years, we've gone away from that, you know, in every industry, because it just doesn't make sense. You want to centralize it and make sure you've got consistent practices, and also just do it once. You don't need to do it six different times. But that's, you know, that probably what would happen if we could no longer do it internally. There would be, you know, pockets of CDE that would do their best, because that's what the law requires us to do. And then there's the continue as is, and then it's kind of what I just mentioned. The systems would start to deteriorate, and something would break, and we couldn't recover, and, you know, and there's so many different components that go into this. It's back to the house. We actually have probably 10 times as many things that the average foundation has in a house, but there's a lot of little pieces that if they go wrong in the, you know, underneath it, then everything gets messed up, you know, on the visible part and the part of it that you're trying to actually live in and work in. So does that make a little bit of sense? The budget request itself is split according to these numbers here. We were able to bring down the numbers some from what we talked about in June. We did some more, we sharpened our pencils a bit and worked out some ways that we could reduce the FTE request and just the straight dollar request, because partly it has to do with how much we can actually do at one time, and partly we just worked out some other ways, some other money that we could use for it. So we're trying to do everything we can to keep it as low as possible as far as additional funding and, you know, work with what we've got. So for the maintenance and infrastructure piece, there's the $524,000, which is, I'm calling it a catch-up, and it's basically because we're kind of behind on this. And I should probably explain a little bit about how we've been able to last this long. We used to get from 2008 was when the grant money came in to about 14 or 15, we were able to get federal funding through a couple of grants, pretty large, $21 million worth of federal funding. So over that time period, with that additional money, we were able to spend those on quite a few projects and also on infrastructure improvements, because that was all part of the grant rules. We could actually do that because the infrastructure has to be at a certain level to be able to support the new projects that we were building. So we were able to defer any requests for more money because we had those federal funds. I think we used it into maybe the beginning of 15, and then since then there haven't been any more of those funds. There doesn't seem to be any in the foreseeable future. I mean, we can't tell for sure, but it's the environment's different, and you know how that works. It's kind of up and down. And that focus was on some pretty major system development, and the focus really isn't on that so much anymore. But it did allow us to make good use of the money for a lot of different reasons, and so we were able to maintain and improve our systems without having to come back to the legislature and ask for money. So that was a good thing. Unfortunately, we can't keep doing that. So you see the kind of quantities we're looking for. The data privacy and security is around $1 million, I had shared with you a document that kind of breaks down the specifics that's in your packet, so if you want to talk about any of those, we can. But one of the examples that we're looking at doing for the security piece is, I think I called it identity monetization in here, which is a fancy way of saying more security when you log into systems. So it'd be similar to like logging into your bank when you're doing online banking. They either have like two rounds of questions that they ask you, or they might send you a PIN number to your cell phone and then you put that in. It's that kind of thing. We want to add that additional level of access kind of security so that we're sure that the right people are logging into the systems. And again, that's to protect the data and to protect the student and the educator information that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. So that's one example of something that we're doing in that category. The last one is improved data reporting. And that one, we've talked a little bit about the reports. We are getting requests for a lot more sophisticated reporting. This is the way the market and the industry is going. And what we're finding is that we have a lot of data out there on our website, but it's really hard to make sense of it, because it's just that it's a lot of spreadsheets and we have a lot of static reports. And so we're hoping to do that, focus it a bit more, and actually provide information that people are really are looking for, so it's easier for them to find it. And then if they need more information about that, they can drill into it, so it's a little bit more interactive reporting method, rather than just putting everything out there, because we hear a lot that it's very difficult for people to use the data on their website. So that's part of it. And then the security of those reports, because we're dealing with such sensitive data, we've got challenges in finding the right tools and putting the right infrastructure together to actually provide that reporting service in a secure way. So it costs a bit of money to do that, but I think we're getting to that point where we don't have a choice, because we need to provide the information, and we need it to be in a form that they can use, but it's got to be secure as well. So that kind of breaks down what we're asking for. I think kind of talked about the big green triangle probably enough, with the exception of, I will add one. The one additional piece that I put in here is some money to do a feasibility study for, and that's down in the category of improving CDE apps under new student info system. There's been a lot of talk and requests from districts for a state-run student information system. which they feel will make it easier for them, take the burden off them for all the data collection, and so they don't have to do as much of the actual work to actually submit data to us. There's pros and cons. You know, right now we have a data collection system that's that they all submit their data through, but they're potentially we could do a state-run system where it's more efficient for them, and we can actually pull the data from the system. They don't have to do as much hands-on work themselves. But there, like I said, there's a lot of pros and cons, and so what I'm recommending is that we spend some money doing a study, feasibility study, and sort of look at, is this really going to be worth it? Because this kind of a system is going to be multi-million dollars. So let alone the fact that we would have to come back and figure out how to pay for that. I don't really want to go there until we've decided if it's worth it and if we are going to get the value out of it. So that is added into the data analysis and reporting piece, and it's $120,000 for that particular study. We would have to do a formal solicitation, so that's our estimate at this point. It could be a little more, it could be a little less, but that's roughly what something like that would run. So that is also added to the total on that side of it. And this is just sort of trying to depict that, assuming we get some money at this point, we can't walk away and not ever come back. I'll be back here again maybe next year asking for more. Just because it's the nature of the business. If we can get the $80,000 ongoing, then that will help a lot, because that's what allows us to pay our bills to the vendors, which we just don't have any choice about. So that's part of this request, is to keep that amount coming to us each year. But recognizing that as we add more systems and add more services that we're required to provide, that $80,000 will go up, but it would go a long way to help us out. So this is really just saying we'll probably come back at strategic points. For example, if everybody decided to do the student information system, we would probably have to have discussions about that, about how to fund it. We did do a decision item 3 years ago, I think. That's the only one we've done for probably, I don't know, 10 or 15 years. And we got money to do a major back end. When I say back end, it's like the underlying, I mean, this is like at the bottom of the infrastructure part of it. It's like at the very bottom of the house. But we needed to beef up our storage and our speed for our data collection system. So we did get that money, and that's going to have to be refreshed in a few years. So although it feels like it's recent, you know, that's what happens. So anyway, this is just to kind of show you that we'll probably be back, but this would go a long way to keep us away for as long as possible. So any questions that I can answer?
Yes. Board Member Mazda.
So what you're talking about largely here is paying vendors and refreshes on programs that you have?
That's a good part. That's a big part of it, yes.
And possibly some FTE.
Yeah. The FTE are largely in the security area, because we have a lot of the tools that we need to do to update at least some of our infrastructure. We just don't have the right people to do it, and we don't have enough people to do it. So.
And what do you mean by people? I guess I'm trying to understand why these software programs or that you're using now, why does that require more humans? It would seem that if they're good softwares and you're paying a lot of money for these programs and you're updating them, refreshing them, I'm trying to figure out how much human capital you need to deal with that.
It's hard to actually quantify that, but as the systems get more technical, you need more people we have to have people monitoring the systems all the time. We tune them to make them work at their peak efficiency. You can't just turn it on and walk away. And the environment, I mean, we have 300 servers. We've got, you know, 15 to 20 applications that that we provide for district use. It's a big organ, you know, it's a big operation. Right now, we only have 25 people, which is pretty small considering the magnitude of what we're managing. So, I mean, I could give you some information on specifically what people are doing, if that might help. It's kind of hard to say exactly how many it takes, but
yeah, I don't know if I'm an example. Am I the only one? Because I think
examples work if you have a straightforward, simple example of a particular system and what the. I mean, what I'm visualizing is a factory floor full of robots. You don't just turn them on. You constantly you've got lots of people walking around checking.
Because they might
getting indicators. But you know, there's a certain tolerance, and once there's an indication that's gone beyond the tolerance, there has to be an immediate intervention on the part of the mechanic or whomever to make sure that the factory keeps going. I don't know if that's kind of what I'm visualizing as you're saying that, but if you have a solid example that can help us understand, we are not. Well, most of us are not technos here.
I can walk you through to run our data collection system. I can kind of give you a feel for what the numbers of people and what they do. So, for example, when a district is needs to submit data, we've got people that actually they have the system that we built to do it, but they have to go in and open. And you're not going to understand the terms, but basically. Turn it on so they can submit their data. That person also works directly with the district to help them figure out what data and how to submit it. There's a certain period of time, a couple of weeks, whatever, that they have to submit it. And then the person in my team then stops that, closes that collection. That then gets sent to our data warehouse team. And we've got somebody that has to load data. And when I say load data, it goes from one system to another. So some of these, it's not all automated.
Someone has to do that?
Someone sets up, does the programming to actually move the data from one system to another. It's not just a press the button and it all goes through. So they do that. And then those people will work with the CVE business units to work out exactly what we need to do with the data at the backside, or maybe it's the front side, depending on your perspective, for reporting. So there's a lot of interaction there. So there's a few people working on that. While all this is going on, we've got people maintaining the underlying systems, so making sure that the database is running. We've got a database administrator that looks at that. We've got the network has to stay running. So that the information can flow between districts and CDE, and that takes monitoring. It's kind of, I mean, it's sort of like the factory floor, only it's a little bit more. It's the brain power side of it. It's not just the you know keeping it running and all. So there's. You know, we can walk away and the system will run for a while, but we can't actually collect data. It'll be running, but we actually have to manage those individual collections, and there's quite a few of those. So, there's manual intervention required, at least manual monitoring required. We have automated alarms that will tell us when something's wrong, but when something's wrong, then we actually have to go in and look at it and see what has to be done about it. So we're just not at the point where it's totally automated. And I don't know that in what we do if we ever will get to that point.
25 people.
Yeah. You know,
Board Member McCall.
Thank you. So I've had a little bit of interaction with my niece to help me understand this, and she's a data security analyst at NASA. Apparently, even astronauts and rocket scientists are not experts in IT security. It's just a whole different kind of tech. But they're not on autopilot either with respect to their use of security software. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to thank you so much for bringing this forward to us proactively and not in the wake of a breach. I really appreciate that we are having this conversation about data security and privacy and fortifying our security and our protocols and talking about getting the right people to help make sure that that's happening ongoing before something bad has happened. And I hope that we keep it that way. And thank you for bringing this discussion up before us. Yes, knock on wood or Formica or whatever this is. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Board Member Flores.
I find this very fascinating. I think possibly because Colorado is seen kind of in the forefront of this, that a documentary, I mean, I just see a documentary in this that would be very fascinating for people. And,
Never thought of that.
And you, Marcia, would be the person. Yeah.
Would be, that could be scary.
No, I mean, I think it would be. And you're talking about the doing this study, you know, and boy, all of that could go in there. And we could even make some money. I would pay to go watch it.
I think I would have to be your co-star. I think you'd have to run with it.
So if I may, I've got a couple of worries, one of which is that you're working really hard to explain this to us, and we're working really hard to understand it, but this is not obvious, which makes it a challenge.
Right.
So the same challenge is going to happen if we bring this across the street.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if it would help. Well, I'm just going to say it anyway. I want to tell you what my priorities are for an information system. And then I have to trust you that that's what we collectively come up with, that that's our priority. So data, privacy, and security is a very high order for me, and I'll wait to hear from my colleagues. Reducing the amount of data reporting, collection, et cetera, at the district level, so that staff at the district level can be working on educating our kids. Right. I hear over and over and over complaints that there's too much work that has to be done at the district level with data. Big districts just hire somebody to do it. Small districts just simply struggle. Mm-hmm. To the extent that there's a system that can be built where they record information once and then there's a safe way to pull that information, massage that information for the various federal reports, state reports. I'm worried on your doomsday list that there are reports that we read to inform ourselves as a board in terms of child preschool programs and how well is that doing. That's one of the things I was reading for the committee, the council that I'm on, the stuff that's required to go to the legislature, the stuff that's supposed to go to the public, particularly the stuff that we want to have go to parents. So it's a real high priority to me that districts are not the worker bees on getting meaningful information out there to an awful lot of different users.
Yeah.
I find that really, really critical. Board Member Rankin.
I agree with everything you said. But in the past, I've asked for a third party to come in and analyze what we have, and I think there are businesses out there that can do that. It wouldn't cost as much as what we're asking for to have that done. I think we'd have a clear picture of this house that needs electrical help, but if it needs a new roof and it needs electrical and it needs water and it needs sewage, sometimes it's better just to scrape and burn and move on to something else. I'm not suggesting we do that, but I am suggesting we don't know enough to determine what we need right now, and we're not understanding all the complications of what we have currently. One of my real concerns is personally identifiable information. The Colorado Judicial Department exposed 620,945 names and Social Security numbers recently. Of that, 23,879
We're in Pueblo and Rio Grande counties, which are in my district. These are adults. That doesn't make it any less important, in fact, than what we have with students. It's just a matter of time, unless we have the best system there is and flexible enough to turn with whatever's happening in our system. I think a third party that specializes in this kind of thing can look at our system and say how much of a Band-Aid we need, how much of an overhaul, how much specific input we need to have from our districts to make sure it's easier for them. There's a lot of moving parts here. I'm going to be a no vote today just because this is too important. I know it'll go across the street, but I just want you to know that we need to know more about this than what we're getting today.
Board Member Rankin, I'd like to ask you, are you suggesting that that's where we go first? That's the case, can you respond to that?
The third party.
To have an overall evaluation done of our whole IT.
Absolutely. I lost that. I've suggested that in the past. It hasn't been done. That's why I feel we need it now.
Have you considered that, Ms. Bohan?
We can certainly do that. We would miss the timeline for this year's budget request, but we could do that.
I thought it was November 1st, the budget request.
It starts earlier than that. Jeff can give you the details.
Please.
Yes, these items are actually due to the Office of State Planning and Budgeting this month, and the budget's largely final before November. So we've already hit the deadlines that these can be submitted. It's easy to reduce your request, but by about the beginning of September, the governor's office has the budget largely set, and moving pieces would affect things in other agencies and stuff like that. So we're at our deadline now for this year's budget submission.
Commissioner?
Yeah, I just wanted to, I think we can certainly do that for some of the top tier items, if you remember the pyramid. Some of these items are just more straightforward in terms of costs coming in to update current systems. So when Marcia was talking about, you know, that new licensing fees come up and upgrades come up for just systems we already have, we just know those are fixed costs. And so I'm not sure a third party, you know, I mean, they would include that, but it would just, it's just, we know how much those systems cost and we know how much they cost to upgrade to make sure that security patches are on there. And all of those pieces. So those are a little more consistent. I'm not sure a third party is going to tell you anything differently than that major piece that we're asking for. I think for the bigger pieces that we're talking about in terms of if we want to upgrade systems for, you know, better data reporting
student ID or
a statewide information system, that would be more, I think that's more the study that Marcia's talking about in terms of that, the feasibility, how much would it cost, what would it take? So, I mean, that's just something for your consideration is some of these are just straight maintenance costs and upgrade for the security of our new environment.
But do we have a breakdown of that? Mm-hmm. We're talking about the $80,000 going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, we've got the breakdown by color.
It would be best
page 15, mm-hmm. The bottom of the pyramid. Board Member Durham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you're all aware how technology adverse I personally am, but that's why we have everything printed for me. But I think I've always, particularly when it comes to capital investment, has had the philosophy that you can pay me now or you can pay me a lot more later. Yeah. And while I'm sure that there may be some questions about this particular submittal, there will be very close scrutiny in the governor's office with the IT department, which I have to say it's not an organization I necessarily have a lot of confidence in. They tend to always want to do it themselves, and I seriously question whether they can do or fully understand our needs for privacy and some of those things. So I'm not I really hope that we don't get it turned over to them. But there will be, I think, significant scrutiny at the governor's office and the Joint Budget Committee level. And so I think some of the reviews that are being requested are very likely to take place kind of in the normal course of the review of this. And I want to vote for it to move it forward, recognizing that it may not be perfect, but to delay a significant period of time, I think is likely to increase the cost rather than decrease. And presuming we don't make any foolish mistakes, which I doubt that we'd make. So we have plenty of chance, I think, to comment on this and work with OSPB and with the Joint Budget Committee. So I'll move the
request. You want to state a motion? We can still keep
talking. Yeah, is it just these two items? Because I do have a whole another write-up here on where is it?
Yeah, it's just those two items that we want to move forward. Correct.
So what about the
we'll continue speaking. We'll move to that next.
This is the only action item.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll move to that other one as a discussion.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Durham, do you want to make a motion?
Yeah, I'll move that we approve forwarding this budget request to the OSPB.
Second. Thank you. Any objection? Oh, we better have a vote. Sorry.
Discussion.
We still have discussion. I can't remember. Do we wait to vote? Okay, discussion. Board Member McClellan, my apologies.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I just wanted to touch on Ms. Rankin's concern regarding going across the street. I think with respect to especially the section on data privacy and security, in the event of a breach, I don't believe that any other department would take responsibility for us. I think that public judgment would fall squarely on the shoulders of the Department of Education and on this board. And so keeping control and not allowing for any passivity, at least for the area that covers data privacy and security, is of paramount importance for us, because we can't divorce ourselves from the responsibility, so we have to take control. So I will be a yes vote on this. Thank you. Yes.
Other discussion? I will say that I do agree with having some kind of a, if we can afford it, an outside organization coming in and looking at where we are. I don't know what kind of expertise it would take to know everything that's out there that's available to us. And I'm going back to the discussion about the $145,000 transcription cost. You know, where are we in terms of the level of technology? What's the best way to do it? This is a really difficult area because it changes literally daily, right? I just bought a new phone and I know that it is outdated because I have it now, and the next day there was something else new that's come through, and I've already gotten the updates, which I used to ignore, and I learned that lesson. Board Member Mazick?
I'd just like to say that I, too, would like to see some sort of third-eye look at this. Is obviously, it's very sensitive information, and we need to be careful. We need to ensure that privacy is private. But, and I also, $23 million over the last 7 years concerns me that we have a high expense for all of these systems, developing them, maintaining them, all of that stuff, which may be completely legitimate. I would just like to get someone else looking at this to make sure that we're doing this as efficiently as possible for the taxpayers.
Board Member Durham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have one quick question. When we get a fiscal note request on a bill that requires that we do data or analysis or create a report, do we generally price that back to legislative council on a marginal cost basis, or do we try and do a full cost allocation up to and including additional strain on a system that's already strained? How do we value that in a fiscal note request?
We do, we don't try to cover anything else. We just keep it at what are they asking us to add as far as the work required.
So it's a marginal cost,
yes,
essentially.
Right.
I would suggest that, given the fact that, that we ought to probably be a little more cautious in responding to fiscal notes and try and include, because sooner or later it's these marginal additions that adds dramatic cost as it strains your overall capacity.
Yes.
And I think we probably ought to be building that into fiscal note requests. And my guess is most of the state governments should be doing that, and they probably don't, which creates, I think it's created a number of crises, whether it's been with the social services management system that is, we've never quite gotten to work, and some of those, they've just failed, and I don't want us to get in the situation where, you know, you can spend $100 million, as I think we spent one time, for a system that was a complete failure. So.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, there are a couple of agencies that I've talked to that do that. They add some additional. We just have not had a lot of luck getting any fiscal notes for technology in the last couple of years.
I think we ought to
but we're trying.
Maybe work that.
Yeah.
Because we're working to presume it's free is, I mean, the legislature likes to presume things are free sometimes.
It'd be nice.
May I just? Sure. Board Member Flores.
I just looked over this 2017 legislative implementation document, and it's all these bills that we're going to have to provide policy for. And there were the fiscal notes for all of them were. There was one for 7,000. All the others were 000. Then I was thinking, how much is this going to cost, you know, for people within, just people? Mm-hmm. And then you add onto that technology and such, and it's just, I mean, just dollar signs kept floating, and yet the legislature thinks it's zero. Fiscal note for all of this stuff is zero. So I agree with you, Board Member Durham. I think we need to be more careful in this because this is fantasy, pure, simple fantasy that it's not going to cost money. And it's not going to it's not going to be or need technology. Mm-hmm. To do the work as well.
Are we ready for a vote, folks? Please.
Board Member Durham.
Yes.
Board Member Flores.
Yes.
Board Member Goff.
Yes.
Board Member Matznek.
Yes, but I would still like to have an outside consultant look at this. And is that something that requires a separate motion?
Maybe
or
add a budget.
Add it to the next agenda?
I'll be happy to discuss that, but let's get the vote through.
Okay.
Board Member McClellan.
Yes.
Board Member Rinkin.
No.
Board Member Schroeder.
Yes. Board Member Masnick, how about if Ms. Rinkin and I speak with Marcia and we sort of come up with a proposal on what, when, how much,
and if we have
that. And what?
And if we have the money.
Well, we got to get that far in order to figure out whether we have the money or whether we have to make a supplemental request. Does that sound like what you're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Oh, yeah, do you want to be in on it?
I recognize that that can be an expensive proposition.
Uh-huh.
I'm wondering if that might be worth it. Yeah. Because this is very... And as I said, they already spent $23 million, right, over the last... Mm-hmm. That was the grant funds.
Yeah, but that had a particular purpose, and it dealt with
the point is,
other
this
agencies.
This is an expensive operation,
stuff. Yeah.
And it's expected to be expensive going forward. You're telling us that it requires some, a lot of human capital. I think it'd be a good idea for us to find out if we're making the most of that.
Mm-hmm. You want to be a part of it?
Of the committee?
Planning, yeah.
Oh, well, you can sure talk to me, but I'm no expert on technology.
Well,
an expert by comparison.
By comparison. I know that I have programs I use in my business.
Right.
And, you know,
so
I
you
mean,
do
I,
know this.
I,
so
well,
you do know.
I understand that, you know, at times you go, wait, that report isn't right. Why isn't it right? Mm-hmm. You know, I get that part. You need to, you know, make sure that information is being inputted correctly, and you need to make sure that the technology is doing what you want it to do. Mm-hmm. But you need to look for efficiencies across all of those programs, so that's what I'm interested mm-hmm. in. It's I'm not on your level at all as far as what but this you, department you is using.
Board Member Goff?
I think it's worth it.
Okay. I agree.
Yeah, thank you. I would inquire of whomever is going to be on this planning committee for this conversation if we could please be informed about what your purpose is. I mean, what are you going to line up the purpose of a third eye overview? What are they going to do? What are they going to look for? What are you thinking they should be looking for? And basically how that would relate to a cost. I guess I just need to see some dots connected here sure. about what we're doing and why. And after that, I guess we'll see. But for our staff's sake, but also for the sake of whoever is going to be the vendor to do this work, I want to know what the purpose is.
And Marcia,
may I?
I'm sorry.
You know, we are.
I know.
Just one question. And
if
we hear, need to hear from
if we had a, if I were to come up with a, like a filmmaker, or, and because accountability, I think on the part of accountability, I know a couple of filmmakers, that I think this would be a fascinating.
It's a great discussion offline. We really, really.
I'll talk to you.
Okay. Yeah. There we go. Ms. Pearson, I think you're next. Am I right?
You are right. You are correct. I will be very quick and brief as we're getting the PowerPoint up. Today, we just really wanted to close the loop with the conversation we had with you all in June. In June, we talked about kind of what needs and where we're seeing ourselves in terms of being able to support schools and districts, both in terms of overall system support and also specific to dropout and student reengagement and graduation. You asked us to go give you a little bit more detail. We wanted to go do some more work to figure out where we can leverage or possibly reallocate funds. So we've done some of that. We want to just kind of give you a quick update on where we're at with that work. We will talk more about that as we go. We don't need to make any decisions today or anything like that. We just wanted to kind of give you the quick update of where we're at. So that's what I'm going to try and do. So this is just, again, follow-up from the June board meeting. In June, we talked about how SI identifies schools versus how we identify in the state. With theoretical 2016 data, which is not what things will be, we will have 2017 in the next month probably all set. We know there's probably going to be some mismatch of schools that are identified under ESSA that are not identified under the state system. Likewise, schools that are identified under our state accountability system that are not identified under ESSA. Where that becomes a challenge is the funding and the resources we have for school support is primarily federal. That's where it's really coming from. So when we have schools that we identify as a state for priority improvement or turnaround that are not federally identified, we have very, very limited resources to be able to support them. Additionally, with the supports we currently are offering, we are at capacity with our staff right now. So we can't really take on more. So that's kind of our current state, which is why we wanted to dig in and figure out what we could do internally and with what the resources we have to be able to better support more schools or be more efficient in what we're doing. Again, last winter, we shared with you on the 2016 results, we saw some early indicators that our supports might be accelerating the rate of improvement for our struggling schools for Turnaround Network and for Connect for Success. We will have 2017 ratings soon. People are madly trying to validate right now. And as soon as we have those new ratings and the new data, we are ready to run the impact on our different supports so we can see if that's continued or where we are and what we learned from there. So we're all sitting around crossing our fingers waiting to see what that is. And we will share with you as soon as we have that. So what we've done this summer is we really looked at what do we need and where are we at currently? So we know one of the things that we want to do better at here and that we can really leverage is making better connections across the department, because we know we have some really wonderful supports going on across the department, but we are not always as connected with each other as we could be. One example, an area that we've really seen that we can bring together is our turnaround supports and our dropout prevention unit. The dropout prevention has developed a lot of strategies and work and tools for high schools to help individual students and help those schools put in systems in place so to prevent dropouts, help students get to graduation. We think that we could be more impactful in our supports to districts if we're bringing our dropout prevention and turnaround support together. So that's a high priority for us, that we're really trying to bring our people together at the department. And we think by doing that, we'll be able to expand our reach and be more efficient and effective in our support for schools and districts. So we're working on that there. The other thing is we've really analyzed our load of schools and CDE staff. So right now we have 4 turnaround support managers. They have 39 schools. We're really at the max. In order to build those relationships working with the schools and the districts that we think is what's the key to some of the support and some of the improvements we're seeing, we really don't want to put more schools on a turnaround support manager. We just think that that's going to stretch things too far. So if we want to support additional schools, we need additional turnaround support managers if we want to continue in that kind of support capacity. So we've done some analysis on that. And then right now for the network schools, they're getting about $54,000-ish for a grant for them to be able to implement some of their strategies. So not a huge amount of money. You all have seen some of over history, some of the federal tiered intervention grants, like those we're giving away. $1 million, huge. We're giving away small grants to the network and see that just it's a bit of money to be able to implement, but it doesn't, we're not thinking that it takes a tremendous amount right here. Again, we're just starting to learn about what we're doing and what's having impact. So we got a little bit more detail because we heard very clearly that you all would like to know what specifically are we looking for resources around. So some of it is funding to distribute to districts and supportive systems improvements along with that kind of hand-in-hand support. And we budgeted about $50,000 per school for that. And then it's FTE to support more schools. So again, we think a key component of our supports are those relationships between kind of this outside partner, CDE staff, or Connect for Success. It's an outside consultant that they hire that's working one-on-one with the schools to help them with their implementation. It's that kind of outside set of eyes that's really helping them move forward. So it's FTE for that, for both turnaround support managers and also continued dropout and graduation support. We have supports in place for dropout and graduation right now. The way the funding's working is we're having some challenges or some of that funding will not be available in the future, so we're looking to be able to continue that. And then one component that we really want to build in is resources to support program evaluation. You hear me say, well, we think this and we think that, but we don't know for sure. We do not have those resources right now to be able to really deeply or even somewhat deeply evaluate what it is, what are those components that are leading to the outcomes that we're seeing. And we would like to really understand that so that we can figure out, well, if it's about support or if it's about this amount of money or if it's about whatever component it is, that we replicate that and ensure that's focused on. And if there's areas or things that we're doing that are not as impactful, that we don't put our resources there. So we really want to make sure we have some ways to learn about what we're doing and knowing what's most impactful for everybody. So that's kind of the more details of what we're looking at. We did it out by the number of schools on average that we'd want to support, because I think that's an important conversation. We know there's limited resources in our state, so it's thinking about how much do we want to be able to expand the schools that we're working with, and how many more schools we want to be able to offer supports to. So our next steps, we've thought about this a lot, and the reason why this isn't a decision item today is looking at where these needs are coming from. They're really policy-based, right? We have an accountability statute that says CDE supports people where they can, but then we have these accountability consequences, and you all know that very well. You just went through all of this. But I think it's a policy conversation to figure out where as a state do we value investment in supports. If we have accountability consequences, do we as a state want to be providing more support ahead of time than what we're currently able to offer? So we really think this is a policy, kind of a policy pathway for the decision. We do think there's things that we can do to leverage existing resources at CDE more, and that's what we're going to work on internally. We've also identified some areas that we could probably reallocate our existing resources due to shifting needs from the field and internally. And so we're working to formally pull all of that together about what we could do to reallocate. And that could potentially give us enough to support another 5 to 7 to 10 schools. But if we want to go beyond that, we may need to ask for more money. So again, it's this kind of policy conversation about where we want to invest our resources, our limited resources as a state. So we'll keep talking with you all about that. We'll need direction from you and from the legislature about where we want to go and what you all want to do for that. But we're just pulling together the possibilities so that people can kind of get a sense of where you want to go. So our next steps are to review the impact from 2017 as soon as we get our performance data all together and really get in more specific about these opportunities, have some conversations with people to see if these are paths forward that you would like us to take or not and which direction you'd want to go with it. And then what I didn't write under next steps I should have is said we're really doing that hard internal work of we've got our supports kind of set and pretty strong across the department, but then how do we bring them together? So we're working on figuring out how do we do that better and kind of multiply our power by being a little more coordinated internally. So that's the really fast, high-level update of where we're at. So thank you
questions,
all.
Questions, comments? Board Member Rangan?
On page 3, where it says the lowest performing 5%.
Yes.
How much money do we put into the lowest performing 5%?
So ESSA, Pat is here, it'll get me if I get it. We have about $9.5 million for school improvement activities. Okay.
Yep.
And that will be split between the lowest 5%, the comprehensive low graduation schools, which are schools that have a graduation rate below 67%, and the targeted support schools as well, that are schools that are identified for individual disaggregated groups that are struggling. Based on our approximate number runs from 2016 data, again, it will change when we officially do it, that's about 200 schools. And so those are the schools that are eligible for that $9.5 million.
When you come back to mm-hmm. us, I'd like to know what you're what you would like, even though okay. you don't have that. Like, it might be 9.5, but yeah. we would like to get 850 million or something. I'm sure it'll be like that.
We are realistic about what's available in our state budget.
Also so. On page 3, do you see where you have the ESSA identified schools in the
yes.
yellow circle and then Colorado Accountability System in the
yep.
blue? Is that overlapping area there part of that 67% and 5%?
Yes. So all, this is getting weedy, I'm sorry. All the 5% are in the overlapping.
Okay.
All of them are there. There's like 36 schools. They're all in the overlap. Okay. The 67, the low grad ones, they are mixed. Some of them are already identified priority improvement turnaround. Some of them are not.
Okay. But the two circles together would be 67%?
Sorry, the 67% is around the graduation rate. It's how we identify the low graduation rate schools. So if they have a graduation rate under 67%, then they get identified.
So if we add the two circles together, what do we get?
How many schools do we get?
Mm-hmm.
We get 270, and then there's more. I can't do my math on my head.
Just an approximate percentage
of all
the students.
Of our schools in the state?
Students, not schools.
Oh, students.
Some are
I got to look that up, Joyce. I don't have that.
Negative
I'm sorry.
Three,
I'm
so
top of my
I don't
head.
Even count that.
Because some of the schools are really small and some are large. But
yeah.
when we have the final numbers, we will make sure we have the number of students, or the
and
percentage
I,
of students.
And I like the numbers attached to those, too.
Okay.
I mean, the cost that numbers. I'd appreciate that, Alyssa.
Okay.
Thank you very much for that report, too. And I just want to put a plug in for Mr. Sherman. He has done a great job in my district. I appreciate your work.
Board Member Massey.
With this turnaround supports,
thank you.
I just want to make the request that we make sure that we are helping all of the schools that are in that 5% struggling. Point taken. We've had an accountability process. We care about making sure that these schools perform better, better outcomes for kids. So that has to include all of our schools, and specifically, I want to make sure that we are serving our multi-district online schools. I know they're not typical neighborhood schools, charter schools, where there's a building and a principal, it's not typical, it's different. They still need the support.
Absolutely. And that's one thing, as we've been reflecting on that $9.5 million and what supports and what will be available, is trying to figure out ways that it can, if schools and districts don't fit that model of support we have created, how do we get them resources so they can get the supports they need?
Yes.
Board Member Durham?
Hey, just, could I have a quick nickel version of why there are 70 schools that we would identify that are not eligible for federal, and why the feds would enter to, mm-hmm. would have 200 schools that yeah. we don't catch? Is that a difference in criteria?
Yep.
So why don't we have one criteria?
We have two accountability systems again, Mr. Durham. This is a big discussion that yeah. we really need to have.
We have two accountability systems?
We now are back to having differences in accountability system between 163 and ESSA.
Can I try and give you the nickel
just
version?
Give me a nickel.
So state system, basically look at comprehensive performance for the school, right? We have all the achievement and growth and all those indicators. Mm-hmm. We have it all roll up to a number. We look at our schools and have levels. We are as a state, our level of concern is above the 5%. We have more than 36 schools, which is Title I 5%, that we're concerned about. We have about 180. So our level of concern are greater. We have a greater percentage of schools that are lower performing overall that we care about as a state. That's where we've chosen to prioritize. What ESSA says is we care. So here's all the schools.
We by we
care
law?
Here. By law and board policy.
So how many schools are there in
history?
The state?
There's about 1,800 schools in the state.
So 5% of that is 90?
So the federal law, it's 5% of Title I schools. So we have about 700 Title I schools. It's 36
schools. And so state law
schools.
Doesn't discriminate between Title I and...
No, poor, state law doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So, and,
right, I think
yeah.
I get it.
And then the federal has these other criteria that are not about the whole picture of performance, but it's just focused on grad rate or just focused on a disaggregated group. So you can have those issues in schools that overall aren't that in that bucket. So.
Got it. Thank you.
Good. Else? Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your part. So the next item on the agenda is a consideration of Denver Public Schools innovation application on behalf of Inspire Elementary School and Maury Middle School. Commissioner?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to take this opportunity to introduce Bill Cottonsetti, who has joined our team. I think he met some of you up at the CASE conference, but he is our new CDE Director of School Choice Office, and I'm just going to take a moment just to introduce you to him. He was the past Executive Director of Compass Montessori in Jeffco. He grew up in Colorado. He has experience as a teacher, administrator, and also has worked in government on a number of issues. He's also steeped in policy and politics. He used to work for U.S. Congressman Bob Beaupre and Lieutenant Governor Jane Norton early on, and has worked in DPS at the Innovation School level and other charter schools. So he has a breadth of experience, and we're really excited to have him on board. And he's just going to give us a thumbnail of why you're seeing this not on your consent agenda item, because the innovation law and waiver law has changed per your the bill that went through. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Cottonsetti.
All right, thank you so much. Hi, everyone. So as I get more comfortable with this, I'll be a little more on the fly, but I prepared some remarks, so I'm just going to go over those first. I'd like to briefly introduce the next item on your agenda, approval of the innovation applications for Inspire Elementary and Maury Middle School. Staff from Denver Public Schools is here to present to you. But before we hear from them, I wanted to quickly note that the board's standard of review for innovation applications has changed since you last met. With the passage of House Bill 17-1271, the Innovation Schools Act now requires that the state board approve an innovation plan if the board determines that the plan, one, is likely to enhance educational opportunity, standards, and quality within the innovation schools or innovation school zones, and two, is physically feasible. fiscally feasible, sorry. This is in contrast to the previous standard, which required the board to approve an application unless it was likely to result in a decrease in academic achievement and was not fiscally feasible. This new standard of review became effective August 9th, so very recently. All of the other requirements of the law have remained the same, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. Otherwise, I will turn the presentation over to Denver Public Schools.
Well, I have questions, but please make your presentation first.
So we'll start with introductions, Madam Chairwoman. Gregory Hatcher, Denver Public Schools Director of Government Affairs. And I apologize for being dressed down today. It's not normal. We had our big RDPS day today, so some professional development time for staff. So a little dressed down.
Maya Lagana, Senior Director of Portfolio Management, and I oversee the team that does the review of innovation plans and makes the recommendations to our school board about their quality.
Thank you for having me. Nice to see you, Dr. Flores. My name is Joe Amundson, and I support the schools that are going through an innovation planning process. So I coordinate supports to them. If they want to go see schools, I take them on school visits, make sure their plan is quality, that it goes through multiple levels of iteration of support from staff input to parent input to different departments in the district that review the plan and give input before we finalize any plans and give them to Maya's team, who ultimately evaluates them.
So I'm just going to give a very brief overview of the process we've already gone through with these plans and then turn it over to Joe for any questions more specific to the individual school plans. So at DPS, we, in alignment with the statute, deeply believe that innovation status can be a tool to increase educational outcomes for all children. And we really encourage our schools and believe our schools should start with a strategic planning process about what's right for their school communities and then determine what, if any, waivers are needed to implement that plan, and if there are needed waivers, seek innovation status. So both of these schools before you today have spent months and months working with a wide range of stakeholders in order to develop the plans in response to the needs of their students and communities. Once they've done that, we run a rigorous internal process with representatives from departments across the district, HR, finance, curriculum, and instruction, to ensure that it meets a quality bar that we believe will lead to strong student outcomes. Our board then has the opportunity to hear both from staff as well as from the schools themselves about the plans and why they believe they will improve student outcomes before they make their decision. The plans have also been vetted by CDE staff to show that they meet statutory requirements and then are approved by our board. Both of these plans were approved by our board in June of this year.
All right, well, I'll keep it brief, but I'm definitely excited to talk about these schools and the work that they've put forward. And I apologize, they're not here. I'm here to speak on behalf of them. They're getting excited about starting their school year. So if there are questions I can bring back or suggestions, I'm happy to do that. So high level, both of these schools are trying to do things that are more innovative to try to improve student performance. I think that is the intention of the Innovation Schools Act. It's the intention of everything we do in school planning. Both of these schools are unique in the amount of work and time and commitment that people have put into these school plans. For example, Maury spent 9 months meeting with a design team, community members, surveying students on a weekly basis, as well as community meetings on a regular basis. In the end, through that process, generating tremendous support and buy-in into the new vision of the school, really around personalized learning. They'll be sharing a campus with the Denver School of Innovation and Sustainable Design beginning this year, which is one of our highest growth and one of our highest performing high schools in Denver. We're really excited about that partnership. And they're a personalized competency-based high school. And what Maury is trying to do is become a true feeder within that facility to the school and aligning around what personalization looks like using the Summit Schools model across two campuses. So that's really their intention. Through the process, they got 100% of support from their staff and their admin and their CSC, who are all engaged in that process. Inspire Elementary School is a school that has another school talking about a really extensive involvement of community. Family members designed this school. So this is a school in Stapleton that just opened this, well, is opening right now. Spent 2 years with a principal fully released to design the school and engage the community in the school design. Really modeling off of the successful programs of High Tech Elementary School, The Stanford School in California and Stanley British Primary is really being the focus of how they're trying to design this really strong personal project-based learning school. And again, similar, staff had the opportunity to provide input. We have over 300 community members throughout the process that engaged in the design work with the school. Extensive review from our team and input from multiple people. Got to visit lots of schools with Marisol and her leadership team and some of her founding staff and family members to work on the design. And similarly, 100% support of their admin teachers and CSC as well as our board. So I'm happy to take questions or talk more about the plans, but just wanted to give you that kind of high level. Here's why we're here with these two schools, and we're really excited to bring that to you.
Questions? Board Member Flores.
On the issue of project-based, is that competency-based? Benjamin Bloom?
Like Bloom's taxonomy focus, that what you're talking about?
No, I mean, Benjamin Bloom did project-based and then was basically, you know, I mean, when he talked about project-based and competency-based,
yep.
You fulfilled the project.
So we went back and forth with the community, and especially this has been something they've been grappling with. So there was the design evolved over the last 2 years quite a bit. We started with thinking about multi-age, multi-grade classrooms and totally integrated content, and we did a lot of research on that, and I think there's a ton of promise, but we weren't ready to go that fast, that deep, that innovative. I think that's something they're interested in, but that's not what this plan is.
So it's technology.
So at a high level, what they're talking about is separating the day into kind of two different chunks. One is really more of a traditional focus on the basics. You have your math, science, social studies, literacy. And then the second piece is this idea of passion projects and students really designing their own learning path based on how they're doing in their core content. So the teachers then regroup students for part of the day to be able to do these integrated units and cross-curricular projects with kids based on their own individual skills and interests. Hmm. At a high level, that's what they're trying to do.
And they would, of course, include the standards.
Of course. Yeah, and so even those passion projects, they're designing units of inquiry around the standards. So the standards are taught kind of in two different ways. One, through a more traditional coursework that we're using DPS scope and sequence as part of their regular, but through the passion projects, using the standards to design individualized, unique projects for kids. But that is really where you have your science and your social studies experts working together to design projects for kids. Thank you.
Just really quick, Madam Chairwoman, I think as Joe was saying, Dr. Flores, Inspire is just beginning, and so their first day of school is coming up in a few days, Monday. And would love to have you come out and visit so we can follow up with you so you can come out and visit. They're in a temporary site while their new facility is being built in Northfield Stapleton.
I think one of the issues that, of course, I have with the project or with Inspire, with all of them, is the nature of the teachers you're going to hire, and the resources that they bring, or the academic training that they have or do not have.
Yeah.
I mean, you are going to basically hire people that will have a degree as teaching. They will have a degree, but they will not have training. They will not be trained as teachers.
They will. So I just want to be clear. We are going
to
hire.
Talk to us about the waiver that you've asked for licensure.
So a couple of things. Like, first of all, can I try to answer two questions with making
Please,
a point?
Sure,
so
sorry.
One is, all core teachers, so all grade level teachers, have to be highly qualified. There's no waiver from.
What's a core teacher?
A core teacher is a grade level teacher in elementary school, so somebody who's instructing kids. What we're talking about, the waiver that we have is from non-core classes. So really with schools like Maury and Inspire, and actually every innovation school, I believe, that's come before you has this waiver where we're requesting to be able to hire people who are experts in their field to do elective-type courses or to do projects with courses. So potentially we'd be able to bring in somebody who wants to do a yoga class that doesn't have to be a teacher but could come in and do that once a week or once in a while with kids. It's not a core content teacher. I just want to be really clear. We recognize the value of teachers, and we want to bring in the best. So the second point I would make is part of why they want innovation is because they want to be able to hire those teachers early and provide additional professional development around some of the additional resources and supports and scheduling that they can do through innovation, because we recognize that not all teachers that come through a traditional route or even successful teachers are going to be experts in this model. So we need to be able to hire the best early and be able to make sure they have the right level of support and training to do this well.
So, but again, you have teachers that are going to, these core teachers, are they the ones that are going to be hired for 1 year? They'll get a contract for 1 year and 1 year only.
So there's a difference between the two schools. So Maury is continuing with the traditional teacher
non-probationary
status, which is what we do with all district schools. With Inspire, they are electing, and their staff have voted and are supportive of having an annual contract that automatically renews based on their end of the year evaluation.
I'm just wondering how many teachers out there, if they are truly, you know, wanting to go into a profession, would go, and I'm sure you can find people for a year, but these people would be trained. They'd have the training.
Yes.
They'd have the 30 whatever hours and...
Yes, they have to be teachers just like in any school.
Okay, and they'd be certified?
Yes.
Okay. And so what you're talking about mainly are these, what I would call consultants that would come in.
Yes, and I think we're maybe thinking of this as bigger than what we're really trying to do. This is really trying to make sure that if there is some way that we can get teachers a little bit additional planning time to have somebody come in and do something really innovative with them, that we don't have to bring in a full teaching position to do something like that, to expand planning time and to give kids opportunities around things like programming at Maury is right. One of the things that they're looking at.
If we approve this innovation without that waiver, what else could you do to bring in expertise? That might even be a question to you. We have so many different options for how to get in the classroom in our state.
So we reviewed this, and one thing I will say is our review indicates that you can't decline particular waivers for innovation schools. And so the vote presented to you is to either approve the plan or to reject the plan. But individual waivers can't be identified and isolated.
What? Run me by that again, please.
So innovation schools, the statute on it specifies that you can either accept or reject the plan.
Right.
For charter schools, you do have the authority to either identify individual statutes that could be waived or not waived. But on innovation plans, it's either accept the plan or not accept the plan.
You mean individual waivers?
Yeah. There's a request for a waiver from licensure.
Yes. So
we have to accept that.
In the innovation plan, there's a request for a variety of state statutes that they're requesting. One of them is for licensure, and on the licensure waiver, we provided further analysis.
I read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the question to the board is to either accept or reject the plan
with
and,
all
and the waivers. Yeah.
Well, if we reject it, then will you come back with a different one? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what you're saying to me.
You're starting in September.
In 3 days.
You know, I just read an article that told me that Colorado has the highest level of teachers not certified. Colorado has the highest percentage of teachers that are not certified. And that concerns me. When I listen to Board Member Durham talk about the lack of progress that our kids are making over time, I reflect on the notion that, oh, gee,
The most important factor for kids is to have a highly effective teacher in front of them. Are we sabotaging that by virtue of the fact that we're not as diligent about requiring certified licensed teachers as other states? That worries me, and that's where I'm coming from. So please don't take this personally. I really worry about what we're doing by constantly lowering the bar for who comes before us. You know, just because a doctor has a license doesn't mean they're great, but it kind of helps give us some assurances that there are some things they know. Same with lawyers and a whole lot of other licenses. And we just keep lowering the bar for who can come before us, before our children. And so that's why I'm kind of pushing back. I don't want to stand in the way of the philosophical piece that you have here, but I'm trying to figure out, isn't there a way to do this without having this kind of waiver? Because I'm not going to be in your school to figure out who's in front of your kids. I also have a concern about the security of our teachers. We, every month, look at the license revocations of what my colleagues call naughty teachers. And when they're not licensed, we actually don't know for sure whether the districts find out when they get involved in some sort of criminal activity. So I'm just kind of really frustrated with where this board's been going over time and where the state's been going over time. We give 100 different ways to get non-licensed teachers in front of kids anyway. My soapbox. Did you have a comment, Board Member Durham?
Yes, I think we... I think we should have a discussion offline about this. I think you and I participated in a discussion on this issue, and I think it revolved around some different questions when we were working on this legislation.
Right.
So,
but it's about raising the bar. I mean, we now can expect School of Innovation to be better.
I don't think this was about raising the discussion we had was about raising the bar, and I mean, if you want a personal reaction, I'm not personally convinced licensure is a guarantee of any level of competency whatsoever, other than you have enough seat time to probably get through something. And certainly go back to my personal circumstance. I had a license. I'm not sure I should have been in the classroom. So I think the description of this, since it's for non-core, you're really not exactly talking about teachers per se. I mean, some of them could be teaching specialties, which, frankly, I think is oftentimes done by. I think if I had somebody teaching business law, I would frankly prefer it be an attorney who may or may not have a teaching certificate. That I think they may be much more qualified to teach business law, and I think we don't take advantage of that. And certainly in physics, for somebody to be teaching physics, you know, a PhD physicist without a teaching certificate could easily be a much more qualified instructor than someone who has a bachelor's degree and a teaching certificate. So, but I think as I understand this is. You know, relatively limited to kind of those things, and the kindergarten teacher is going to be licensed and certified. So I think we're dealing with more specialty, and so I don't view this particular waiver in the way it's stated as really even putting unlicensed people in front of classrooms. And, you know, I know you read that article. I mean, it's a little bit like the article that said that Colorado was last in athlete safety, which was completely nonsensical. The article was completely baseless. I don't know if this one's any better. I'd be willing to look at it. But that article was, and that rating that was given to the oversight of Colorado's athletic programs was completely false. So I just don't think this is the kind of threat that you've been concerned about. So I'd move the granting of the waivers to...
Board Member, you finished?
Yeah, well, I'll just move the granting of the waiver to Inspire Elementary and Morey Elementary Schools.
I wanted to speak before that.
Go ahead, Board Member.
One of the things I'm worried about And we know that there are children, we have more children that are coming into schools that are having issues, problems, that are not ready, you know, to sit down and learn. And there are issues that may have, they come in from home. And so teachers are having more problems. And we heard from the studies, you know, that are going on and the surveys that are taking on, especially our commissioner reported this morning about that, and that it's harder for teachers. And I think that schools, especially with young kids, need stability. They need stability, especially if there's chaos in their life. And when you're not going ready to build that, at least for 3 years, when you're not ready to commit as a school to take someone for 3 years, which is, you know, what a licensed person who comes to a school and devote at the very least and give that person a chance for 3 years, then we're not adding much to that stability that is so needed in our elementary schools. And I think that's a big problem, this business of closing schools, I think that has a lot to do with why our kids are not learning. I mean, we need that stability. And when we have that churn, you know, that is so important, especially to your district who works on churning it up, I think that we get into problems. So I have big concerns about that, and especially with a 1 year where you're not ready to commit. I think that you're not ready to commit to give that person or to make that commitment, not just to the person, but to the system, to the school, to the entity that basically is needed. You cannot, you know, just turn around. 1 year teacher is just not what you need. Maybe in Stapleton that might be, and you're looking for something there, but I think even so, I think we find that these kids, it's not just coming from a certain socioeconomic. I think that the instability is, and the chaos that we have, comes from all levels of
Board Member Goff.
Community.
Thank you. I didn't think this was a concrete question when I first formulated it, but perhaps it really is. Your definition or the outlook of the school on words, if you're using core classes, is that the same thing as academic?
So when we use the definition from highly qualified, which came in conversations with CDE staff, so academic, and it's specifically laid out on what highly gifted, so grade level, science, social studies, math, music, okay, physical education, those are all core, Spanish, foreign language, those are all core.
Okay.
Those are things that we can't touch.
Thank you.
That makes me feel better.
Because I wanted to do a little bit of a crosswalk between what is outlined in our statutes pertaining to standards, pertaining to all of the statutory language that talks about that topic, what's core, and so on. And frankly, graduation requirements can fit into there a little bit too. I wanted to know that. And to clarify, and for whomever may be listening today, your teachers will be licensed.
And
if they are being employed to take over one of those mentioned topics, that specifically, so we can all rely on good communication with folks, that when we talk core subject areas and such as that, and how an innovation school might approach fulfilling that expectation, I just want to be real clear about that. So your extracurricular elective type things, are people going to be really will they be clear on what those options might look like? So if a parent or, you know, someone who's interested in teaching at your schools, are they real clear about what an extracurricular course is and what that means and who's qualified or who is considered qualified to teach it?
So the school that we worked with, that was actually part of the design process with families and saying, we actually want this yoga class and we want this programming class at Mori. That's where we're at right now. And then just to be clear also, arts is also an area where you have to be licensed as a teacher. Music is also an area. So we're really talking about these kind of really unique things that are 21st century skills that our schools are thinking about.
But to go back to the safety question, there clearly are still background check requirements for all people who work in our schools, right, regardless of the licensure requirements, right, to name that as well. And we do get those records as a district.
So I really appreciate Ms. Goff's question, because my notion of core was four subjects. Mm-hmm. So is it safe to say, and it would help us, I don't think it's anybody's fault here, it would help us if we defined it, if you actually put in the definition of what is core. And it sounds to me like it's an area where we have Colorado standards that need to be met. Does that sound right?
We put it in our replacement policy too, in the plan. So if you want to open up to the specific content areas, I can share that with you.
You know, I'm going to trust you to tell me the truth. So don't worry about that. It's just that core, there's some folks that look at core as being math and language arts, period.
Right. Yeah.
There's some that have four subjects.
Yeah.
That's not
and so that clarity, I really appreciate that you asked that, because I was certainly confused.
May I just
ask? Short, please,
short.
Madam.
I just wanted to say that I think you were so concerned about the laws and acts and such that you really didn't explain and give a kind of a definition or a clear view of what you wanted to do. And I think it would have been easier had you... Yes, there is this law that tells you that you can do this, but if you had given a description of what you wanted to do right off the bat, you know, and I worried so much about the laws that it could have been easier for us to understand. And
lesson learned.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Excuse me.
Board Member Rank. Oh.
Madam Chair, right. I hope there's no lesson learned here, and I hope staff does not acquiesce to going beyond what the requirements of the statutes are, which is that, you know, they can request broad waivers. Any district, and any district that wishes to request a broad waiver should do so.
And
the whole idea of innovation is that it's something different, and to have the same old, doesn't move the ball forward. Because when I talk about lack of progress in test scores, I'm not attributing that to any particular thing except a lack of diverse thought in how to better deliver education. And so I'm hoping that the chair is not trying to stifle future applications for innovation status and put them in some sort of box about licensure, because I'll say what I've really shouldn't say, but I'll say it anyway. We used to have a saying around the legislature that licensure is for dogs. And it doesn't guarantee any professional competency. So you may think it means something, and you know it means you can check a box, but I think that's about all it means.
Well, I don't disagree. I don't agree with that description. Society asks for licensure for certain reasons. It does serve a purpose. It is not a guarantee. I completely agree with you. But that is not what I was attempting to do. I misunderstood what core subjects were, and that's all. And I think that given that we're just a citizen board, it would be helpful just to have the definition
That's all I'm saying would have been more helpful. That's
are
all.
You asking staff to put that in?
Well, the next time they won't have to, because I'll just assume that if they say core, that there is a state, a definition that exists that I was unaware of that's based on the former HIDTA qualifier.
I don't know if there's a definition. Is there a definition?
Well, what I can do is I can offer that as feedback to schools that are applying. And so if they reference the term core to get clarification as to their meaning of core.
In the previous federal law, there was a definition, and we've continued to use that one of what we meant by a core subject, the places where there were federally defined highly qualified requirements.
And what I was doing was suggesting how it would make it easier for us to understand if a description of what the school might look like. We know that that we have all these... Well, I know that we have all these laws and such, and they matter, but a little description of what this school looks like would have made it so much easier. It's like a, well...
Can we vote?
Board Member Rankin.
I move to affirm the Innovation School application from Denver Public Schools on behalf of Inspire. This is a clarification. He said waiver. I move to affirm the Innovation School application from Denver Public Schools on behalf of Inspire Elementary School and Maury Middle School.
I second it.
Any objection? Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Apologize if...
thanks.
Sort of ran you through the record. But
I'd just like to remind everybody that charter schools have teachers without license, and they're not all failures. So
that's
like
not the point.
Well, in fact, they're slightly more successful.
You were concerned about whether they were licensed teachers in front of students.
But if they're licensed, they stay longer.
The research is that they do stay longer.
None
of that is true.
Where are we?
1202. It is. Then why do we say I'm concerned about them not being licensed? If it's case by case, let's stop saying
that. He has an idea of how why people are coming into the army and then coming out and committing suicide. And he's a psychologist.
Okay, what's your suggestion?
That there are good things that happen in the world, and they have an identity. There's an identity that goes with it. And that, you know, maybe they don't know who they are, but they're forming. The army sort of helps them, armed forces. But then sometimes it doesn't work, and then they're out. They've served their time, maybe. They're out, and they find it very difficult, especially in
So we have an exec session.
Hard skills in the military, and especially there's been trauma and such. And the personality has been, you know, they're young. They're 17, 18 years old. They go in, and they don't know who they are.
Right.
They do. I don't think the other course isn't bad. I think it's positive. And he thinks so, too. But sometimes they're left out. And then there's no support system, you know, especially...
So would you please call some assumption? So, folks, I need a motion, please, to convene into exec session.
So are we going to skip, or are we going to come back then to 1203, 1202?
Yes, we will.
Okay.
Okay. Do I have a motion, please, to go into exec session?
So moved.
Thank you.
All
right. Second?
Okay,
an executive session has been noticed for today's state board meeting in conformance with 24-6-4023 ACRS to receive legal advice on specific legal questions pursuant to 24-6-4023A Roman numeral 2 CRS and matters required to be kept confidential by federal law or rules or state statutes pursuant to 24-6-4023A Roman numeral 3 CRS.